This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And it's the X-Trays. We all are fired.
Face to be nation, I will ejaculate all of my energy upon the third version of Carter's face until he is decimated. And that, of course, the words of the great Broken Matt Hardy, and I am your co-host here tonight on the fifth episode of Clotheslines and Headlines, JT Rosero, and this is the only place to be in your wrestling world to take you around the world of wrestling. With me, as always, one of my partners here on the show, and that is the Godfather, Nate Milton. Nate, how are you?
I am doing good, Brother JT, and I guess since Larry Wilmore got, I am your only source for Brother keeping it 100 on these internet streets.
Yeah, and I'm a little sad you didn't work ejaculation into there.
Hey, I was spent.
The man who is eating a cake to the point of near ejaculation, that is our man stepping in here tonight, our buddy Steve Willey. He's usually the third man in the booth, had to take the night off, had some stuff going on out in his personal life. So we said, okay, that's the setup of the show. We'll go ahead and bring in our number one sub, and that is, of course, our TNA correspondent. But tonight, he'll be talking all things wrestling with us, and that is the one, the only cake eater, Aaron George. Aaron, how are you?
I am no longer nearly ejaculated. But I am also very full of cake, so I don't know what's coming out of me right now.
Okay, so here we are, our fifth episode. Thank you, and thank you, Aaron, for stepping in for Steve. We appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys.
Oh, yes. I
didn't mean that like that.
We are going to tackle some headlines here tonight before we dive in. Later tonight, we have a full SummerSlam weekend preview. It's our mega preview episode. We're going to be talking all of NXT TakeOver and all of SummerSlam. Chad Campbell's going to be here. We're going to talk some New Japan, wrap up the G1 climax, as well as talk about some Kenny Omega. We'll talk about Chad's trip down to the Scenic City Invitational and also touch maybe a little on that Ospreay-Vader fiasco from last week, too. But before we do that, some big news broke today that we're going to cover first. And I'm going to read this right from ESPN.com, covering WWE news like it's nothing now, like it's just their job. And it's actually pretty high in their bullet list as well. But they're reporting via WWE that both Paige and Alberto Del Rio suspended 30 days for a wellness violation. So that said, looking at, yeah, I mean, they never really clarified to me that Paige's was due to wellness, but pretty much all the 30 days ones are. So the speculation, the hubbub and the irresponsible speculation, I should say, that's out there on Twitter is that, of course, the rumors have been swirling. Del Rio was kind of on the hit list for partying, that they were going to let him walk after his contract, that he was done. And they didn't like his kind of partying attitude. And now all of a sudden him and Paige get popped for wellness. No one said it was steroids per se. So what say you, Nate and Aaron? Do you think this is a weird, funky little timing that they happen to be pissed off at Del Rio and here comes the violation? And oh, guess what? Your girlfriend's getting popped too. Does it play into the partying? What are you reading? What are you hearing? And what are you thinking, Nate?
I think that there's a couple things at play here. First of all, I think it is true that they are probably done with Del Rio, but he's probably done with them too. You know, in the sense of since he's come back, what have they really done with him? Other than the initial return and beating John Cena for the U.S. title, they've done nothing with the guy. So I think there's probably a mutual frustration there. But in terms of what exactly this was, yeah, I'm doubting it's something steroid-related. And Paige's suspension could be something punitive. But if I was going to give my best educated guess, it's that they were both partying together. I've got my own issues here, though, with the wellness policy, just because, like, we don't know what these substances are. You know, it could be anything from something as relatively harmless as weed to something as serious as, you know, some harder drugs, you know, heroin or something like that. So we, you know, we don't know. And I think it's just a bad situation. And I know Del Rio saw them dollar signs, you know, when he came back, but sometimes money isn't everything. And I just think this is a bad fit both ways. And it's unfortunate that Paige is kind of being roped into this. So I hope cooler heads prevail, and this is not something that damages Paige going forward, because I do think she has a future with the company. Whereas ADR, I think this is probably his swan song.
Yeah, I don't see Del Rio returning from this. I mean, his contract was up anyway come October. I think he never, unless they bring him back for like one big job, but they kind of did that with Cena last night, so on SmackDown. So that seems to probably be it for him. That'd be my guess. And Paige, I don't know. They might look at her as, is she worth the trouble? You know, like, they kind of have a bunch of divas that have passed her by. I know she's
an afterthought now.
Right? And I know she's key on Total Divas, but replaceable. So do they say, fuck it, and just dump her and think, man, maybe 2 or 3 years down the line, she'll grow up a bit and come back? What do you think, Aaron?
I guess. I mean, like, I can't remember a person who's been more shunted to the background than Paige in the last couple of years. Like, she was such a focal point of that division, and then the others came up and they tried to make her the leader, and then that was just done. Like, she was just done and never seen before. I do think that this is quite an interesting ballsy move by WWE, like, on the heels of the Lesnar stuff. Like, the Lesnar stuff comes out, they go out on a limb and say, well, we're not going to – and look, I'm not condoning Del Rio or Paige. I don't know what they did. But they went out of their way to say, like, oh, we don't worry about part-timers for our wellness policy. And within just a couple weeks, they suspend 2 mid- to lower-card acts. And I think that's interesting and kind of telling in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And, you know, I don't know if it was Chad or someone raised the question – where, you know, who besides Reigns has been popped that wasn't, like, kind of suspicious timing? I mean, and, you know, he was the only one recently that kind of hurt them in any way, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah. And Nate's bang on. Like, Del Rio just never fit back in. Like, he had that one night, and then, like, and he totally reinvented himself on the indies.
Right.
Like, if you saw him in Lucha Underground or Ring of Honor, he was like a different guy. He came back, had that big thing, and then nothing.
Well, the Mex America stuff was awful. And then, you know, League of Nations, I thought he was okay. Like, especially towards the end of it when they were starting to build some camaraderie in the group. And I might be one of the few people that actually enjoyed League of Nations. I don't know. But
I liked it for Rusev. Like, he was a blast in the League of Nations.
I just love how, like, happy they were together. Like, always hugging and joking around. Yeah, the lads. Like, that's, to me, that was funny. It took them a while to figure it out. I think it was after Sheamus lost the title that they finally got there. But anyway, regardless.
But to me, man, it's the whole thing with Del Rio just is frustrating, because – I know the money's there, and money's great, but I'm wondering what else was put on the table to make him sign that contract. Because, you know, let's not forget the reason why he left in the first place was because he felt that this was an environment that was prejudiced towards Mexicans, you know, and you had the racial slur by the web guy that he ended up slapping, and that was what ended up getting him canned in the first place. And so then I guess the buzz or the rumor was that they were going to try to cater to the Latino market, and he was going to be one of the forefronts of that. And what'd they do? They gave him a title. They paired him with Zeb Coulter, which is the exact opposite thing to do. And then they had him and your boy Kalisto play hot potato with the United States title,
yeah,
which didn't elevate either guy. And so if I'm Del Rio, I know that he probably wanted to prove himself in the biggest company in the world, but sometimes there's a reason things happen. And I think, like Aaron was alluding to, man, I thought he came off like a huge deal in Lucha Underground and to a lesser extent ROH. And I wish he would have continued on that path. And who knows?
So maybe that's it again, bro.
Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah, maybe that's where he'll end up landing. And as far as Paige goes, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for her to maybe get out of that bubble and go and see what other avenues are out there. Because
and she's so young, too.
She's young, but she's also somebody who has been around this business her whole life.
Right.
And I think that that probably offers her a unique perspective that some of these other girls don't have. So I don't think her leaving the WWE, whether by choice or whether by force, would be the worst thing in the world for her career.
I wonder if Lucha Underground even needs Del Rio at this point. Like, I feel like when they had him last, it was kind of to help establish them. They're so ingrained now. The third season's set. They're going to hit syndication. They got Mysterio there now. You know, they have Prince Puma, obviously, whose name is much hotter than it was a year ago as far as recognition. So I don't know if they even need him. Like, I don't know if they'll even bother to spend the money to bring him back.
There's another landing spot, though, that has open arms for former Titan Towers employees.
Yep. And uses them well, for the most part.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how things go with Del Rio and Paige. I guess we'll reconvene in a couple episodes here in a month, and we'll see if they're back or what's going on. Some other news and headlines, though, around the world of wrestling over the past week, and one has to do with our favorite promotion, Aaron George, that is TNA Impact.
God, I thought we were not going to talk about it tonight.
Oh, we are, Broken Aaron, because we have a new president of TNA, and that is the rat in the cage himself, Mr. Billy Corgan. And, you know, back and forth, a lot of joking. Is it on screen? Is it off screen? Is it a figurehead? Is it Jack Tunney? Is it real? Like, what is going on? And the official word seems to be that to help further the, or as part of the sale, it was that Dixie would move into kind of this overseer role and Billy would take on the day-to-day president's job of the promotion. But what have you seen or heard, Aaron, and what do you think of this move here?
Look, I just hope it's an off-screen role. It's unfathomable to me that a guy with that much stage experience is so awkward on camera.
He should just start like singing his updates on Impact. Maybe that would
help. I'd be fine with that. It's like someone animated a scarecrow and asked him to deliver lines, and it's just horrible. But
he just needs a brain.
He just needs a brain. but I don't know. Like it's so unclear what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, and they always talk about he has wrestling experience, and he does, but it's because, I mean, look, if you look at the TNA product in the last 6 months, there has been a turnaround, right? It has turned around, and it's watchable now. It's very hard to tell how much of that is him, how much of that is just different writers, how much of that is new talent coming in, how much of that is just Matt Hardy, like, putting the promotion on his shoulders and carrying it. So I think it's interesting. I think the next few weeks will be very telling to see where he kind of goes with it. I mean, they're kind of in a weird dead period now. Mm. Like, their main event for Bound for Glory is set, but it's not for 2 months. So
everything's taped, right? Yeah. They're taping it this week or so, right? Like 7 weeks worth of shit.
Well, that's it. So nothing's changing on that end. Right.
They're set until then.
But so it's going to be interesting to see what he does. Look, if nothing else, it brings a bit of mainstream attention to them, the smallest amount. But
so he went on Facebook, and this is per WrestleZone. He gave a State of the Nation address to fans. Of course, he leads with the Smashing Pumpkins news.
For like 10 minutes of Smashing Pumpkins.
Said he's committed to the band, and his music has been in touch with the band members. That makes life easier. So the band's not at the point where they're getting back together, but they're open to doing something on the road. Then said he's the president of the second biggest pro wrestling company in the world, been part of TNA for 5 years, takes his role very seriously, says there's many challenges. So, I mean, it seems like he's going to be the face of the company, whether it's legitimately or on TV or some kind of hybrid role, which I think is what it is. I think he's probably increased in his position and say behind the scenes and will be kind of the figurehead on TV as well going forward, which, I mean, is you know, brainless scarecrow as he comes across, like you said, Aaron. You know, if someone's flipping through and you see Billy Corgan as the figurehead, at least it's going to resonate more than like Dixie Carter would have. If you have to have a figurehead president on TV, at least that's there. I do love the such a different era. Like, could you picture any company in like 1987 saying they're the second biggest company in pro wrestling? Right? I mean, everything was such a vacuum. The biggest, the greatest. Like, to admit that you're the second biggest, which I guess, I mean, I don't know, admirable in some ways, but stupid in others, right?
To compare it, like, you'd also have to have in 1987 Paul Simon take over like a wrestling promotion.
Or Sting. Sting introduces Sting.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. It's funny, though, because, you know, Aaron mentioned the minuscule media coverage, and I was sent an article by one of the listeners to a link to a Rolling Stone article this week talking about Corgan in this transition and him taking over as a president of Impact Ventures, which is a very presumptuous name.
They're going to have a venture?
To me, it's very interesting because Dixie Carter is still involved. You know, she is the quote-unquote chairman of the company. But this is very much, to use a sports analogy, this would be like your man Steve Ballmer from the Clippers buying the Dallas Cowboys. But as part of that, he's like, well, you know what? I'm going to own the Cowboys, but I'm going to keep Jerry Jones here as the general manager. That's not a good thing. And for TNA, and God bless Dixie Carter, but I think that there's a part of her that's always going to want to be in control. And part of the article said some of her duties would be focusing on long-term planning and global growth for the company. And I'm like, I don't think you're qualified to do it either.
That's ambitious.
And it's sad because TNA is actually, I won't say they're great now, but they're solid.
They're better than last year. Last year was almost unwatchable.
The Destination America era was terrible. But I would say
and they're still fucking going. They are still alive. They sit here every year at the end of the year. And amazingly enough, this is like the first time in like 5 years we're not asking, will TNA be around next time this year?
No.
Because they actually somehow have dead cat bounced all the way back up into relevancy.
There's something to be said for being resilient. And I think, you know, when you talk about some of the moves and some of the new faces, you know, whether you're talking about Mike Bennett or you're talking about Moose, or this past week we saw the debut of Aaron Rex, who was the former Damian Sandow.
Great name.
And he came out and cut a hell of a promo. It's like there's this extreme forward momentum, but at least they're taking baby steps. And I think there's enough there to work with something. There's enough clay there to mold into something in the right hands. I'm just not sure if Billy Corgan is the right hands to mold this company.
Well, it's funny because like people are really hard on Dixie, and like I haven't been a TNA fan for a long, long time, but like when I look at their promotion, the problems for me are all much bigger picture problems. Mm. Like I feel they do quite well with the talent they have. Like the talent they have, they use everybody to their almost to their potential, and even in Sandow's promo this week, where he's like, this is a level playing field. And obviously it's all a work in the promo, but it's true. Like in TNA for the most part now, the better people are the ones who get the pushes. They listen to the crowd to a degree. So for me, it's kind of bigger picture things that need to change. And if that's what Dixie was working on before, then I think maybe any new voice might be interesting to see where they go.
You know what? In terms of like, concrete things, and you know, we're in this election season where you got candidates that put out these plans and what they want to do, but they offer very little in the way of concrete solutions. Here's one thing that I would love to see Billy Corgan do, and he probably won't do it, but he might listen to this, or my good buddy Nick over at Russell's Own might be able to pass this along to Billy because they got those Chicago connections. But if I were to make one change, if I'm Billy Corgan and I can do whatever the hell I want because now I'm the president of Impact Ventures, still preposterous name, but that's neither here nor there. I would say we got to get out of the impact zone because part of what doesn't allow this show to stand out or stand apart is the environment. Like when Sandow came back last week, yes, he got a decent reaction, but I think within that crowd of theme park dwellers, It wasn't the maximum reaction that he could have gotten. And so if I'm Billy Corgan, I got connections, man. I've got connections with different venues.
Can they afford it, though, Nate? Can they afford the arenas, and can they draw?
Well, see, I'm not even thinking arenas. Oh. I'm going old school, but I'm trying to bring it new school. And I'm going to take a page out of the Glow Handbook. Billy Corgan, go to Vegas.
Right.
Make a deal with the hotel.
Go to the showboat.
I don't care what. Call up the Riviera. Call up
the Barbary Coast.
Taj Mahal, whoever you want to talk to, the Venetian, and set up a small, not even an arena, but a room, basically, which is what it would end up being.
Come right here to Twin River Resort and Casino in Lincoln, Rhode Island.
And, you know, make it a deal that's equitable for both the hotel and also for the company. But I think just being in a different atmosphere would make the show pop a little bit. Because if you remember the Global Force Wrestling shows that were held out in Vegas. I obviously nobody's ever seen those because they're not going to see the light of day.
I hear they're awesome though.
But everything that everything that was put on the internet and the pictures that we saw, it came across at least looking like a major league product, even if it wasn't a major league promotion. And TNA, I think they've got a much firmer foundation than Global Force. They just need to add some presentation to that foundation. And I think that's one move right there that would change how the show comes across on TV.
All right. So with that said, we still got a lot more to discuss tonight, Nate Milton. So why don't we go ahead, and Aaron George, why don't we go ahead and take a break?
Would that segment run about 19 minutes, 79 seconds?
We're going to take a break, take a breather. I'm going to kick back, put some Cherub Rock on, think about today, and then we're going to go ahead and move on. We'll be talking WWE coming up next. We're going to talk preview NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2, preview SummerSlam. Later on tonight, Chad Campbell here to talk New Japan and late-breaking news, Brad Woodling in to talk some Ring of Honor pay-per-view coming this weekend. Busy weekend, one of the biggest busiest weekends in pro wrestling year, I think, up there at WrestleMania. So a lot going on. I am one here, along with my two friends, the Rhinoceros, and I'm out of song. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back.
For any individual in trouble or in pain.
With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be another Lincoln.
If I only had a brain.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back. We are having a blast here tonight at Clotheslines and Headlines. I'm still joined by the Godfather, Nate Milton, JT Rosero, and myself, Aaron George. We're having a great time. We talk some TNA, some Smashing Pumpkins. It's been so much fun so far. But we got a big weekend coming up. Big, huge weekend, if you will, in the heart of New York City. And would one say it's the biggest party of the summer?
Yeah, I think one would say that. And Smashing Pumpkins, I feel like I'm going to pack up my CD case, put it back under my dashboard. Would it go under the dashboard? Under your seat? I forget. It's been so long.
Just party like it's 1979, boys.
That's all we're going to do. We already used that one, Aaron. Sorry.
I missed it. I know.
All right. So, yeah, when we first said we were going to do previews on the show, we said we're not doing the match-by-match thing. But you know what? This is a pretty big weekend. There are 17 matches across these two pay-per-views or two specials, and I think all of them deserve some kind of discussion. So we're just going to run through the card. You know, the matches we don't deserve a lot of time. We're not going to give a lot of time, but we're at least going to reference them, and then we'll go from there. So NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2, of course, last year's was a huge hit. The Barclays was a rockin'. Some big-time matches went down, and here we are yet again. And a big slice of Place to Be Nation will be in the house for both of these shows. This is my first NXT special. I went to a house show earlier this year, but I'm really looking forward to this show. And then we'll be at SummerSlam as well. So let's start at the bottom. I don't know if either of you guys have much to say about Ember Moon and Billie Kay. It sounds like it's going to be a squash. Either of you want anything to say about Ember Moon's debut coming up?
Billie Kay is going to kill her.
Just that I'm actually happy, terrible name aside, that Athena's getting some shine because she's been putting in work on the indies and particularly in places like Shimmer for a minute. So I think it'll be it's not going to steal the show, but I think it'll be a better match than most people expect.
It'll probably be better than the Andrade Cien Almas match from the last time.
You think so?
Yeah, that match was nothing.
Well, speaking of
nothing?
No, he's not up yet on our card here. We're talking No Way Jose taking on Austin Aries. I mean, match aside, although maybe a little speculation of who could win this one. What do you guys think? Wait a minute. Ben Morse, what are you doing here?
Oh, hey, guys. You know, I was just camping out, seeing the stars appearing before me like Nate Milton. Just getting excited, just getting ready for SummerSlam up here in my neck of the woods here in Brooklyn.
Very, very good. And, Ben, I'm glad you made it just in time because we're just starting to get into the meat of the NXT card, and then we're going to go through SummerSlam. So you want to stay, stick around?
Yeah, please slice me off some of that meat.
All right, here we go. I'm going to break the slicer out and put that meat on it and have at it.
Have extra cake, just so we're clear.
Yes. No, I'm lactose intolerant.
And we've all already ejaculated. That was settled in the first segment. So, let me start with you, Ben, since you're here.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on Austin Aries' run so far? I've seen a lot of people mention disappointment overall with him. Do you see him being anything more than an NXT mainstay, or how would you grade him so far?
I think the hardest part of the Austin Aries run in NXT is that NXT is really only designed to have a certain amount of stars at any given time, right? It's not like WWE where you can have a dozen guys who are working towards the main event or being right on the undercard. If you're in NXT, if you're on a takeover special, there's only five matches. So if you're not in the top star spot, if you're not one of those top two or three guys, you tend to get bumped down a little. And I think with Aries, that's what's happened. I think he's been a little bit forgotten. I think he got passed over for Samoa Joe, for Shinsuke Nakamura. There's no room for him in the main event. But at the same time, there's no room to bump him up to WWE. I do see him as being, like you said, JR, an NXT mainstay. And that's not the worst thing in the world, but there's really no heat on when are we going to see Austin Aries in the WWE? When are we going to see those dream matches with John Cena? When are we going to see him go against some of the guys on the main roster? So I think he's kind of settling where he is, and it's disappointing. He's a guy who a couple years ago – people don't remember in 2011, he was TNA CM Punk. Mm-hmm. Nate can back me up on that one, I'm sure. And he was the guy who it seemed like could be the transcendent star, but it seems like wrong place, wrong time.
What do you think, Nate?
This is it's frustrating because I think Ben brings up a lot of good points in terms of the way that NXT is designed from a structural standpoint. But I think like my frustration is, we got Austin Aries and other people down here, but, and I talked about it last time on Clotheslines and Headlines. The roster on SmackDown outside of, your top five guys is still pretty thin. And so it'd be like if I had a bet with Ben on the NBA Finals and I won the bet. And Ben, every time I see him, he's like, oh man, I just don't have the money right now. But every time I see Ben, he's wearing some new Jordans, like he's Shane McMahon or something.
Yeah, it sounds like me.
I feel some type of way. And that's the way I feel about this, man. Like, Austin Aries should win this match, but at the end of the day, does it really matter? I think he's in a holding pattern, much like Brother Ben said, until one or two of the bigger names that we'll talk about as we run down this card end up getting promoted up. And then maybe Austin will slide up into one of those other spots.
To be honest, where I see Austin Aries long term is as an agent role. I think that's where he's going to naturally gravitate. I think he's just going to be a great backstage agent. He's probably going to have a job with the company, but I think at his age and with his abilities, that's where he'll probably be best served.
Yeah, I think what Ben said about wrong place, wrong time is so fitting for this guy. Like, he got completely overshadowed by Nakamura, but then again, who wouldn't in this scenario? But I think that I think his age hurts him here because I think that WWE has the younger guys they want to push on each brand. Like, they have the Balor on Raw. They got Apollo Creed on SmackDown. And so I think if he were a bit younger, he might have the opportunity for those roles. I think what would be interesting for him is, I mean, I don't see him. I mean, maybe he'll be a mainstay in NXT, but I think there might be a nice little niche role for him if they were to bring him up as like a veteran in the cruiserweight division. I know it's not the most glamorous thing for a guy like him to do, but I think he could probably get a good amount of exposure through that, and he could really help center the division. Because I think his best days are behind him, unfortunately.
All right, so let's move up through the card. And probably the sleeper – I don't want to say sleeper match because I think a lot of people are looking forward to it. But beyond the top two, the match most likely to steal the show, that is a tag team title match between The Revival – who have become quite beloved with their recent work, and Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, who obviously had a great match in the Cruiserweight Classic Tournament And just when things were looking murky for their future, William Regal said, no, no, you guys can stick together, and here's your tag team title shot. So I think this match is going to be pretty awesome. I'm really looking forward to seeing it live. Ciampa has been a madman. He's been on a roll since leaving Ring of Honor. Gargano, obviously, great reputation as well. Both have done great work within NXT. Aaron, do you see a tag title change here, or do you think we're going to play the little bit of a slow burn with Gargano and Ciampa eventually splitting and feuding?
I think we're going to get the slow burn. They don't change those titles very often, and they kind of changed them often in the last couple months by going to, like, I guess it was at the last two specials. Once went to Alpha, and then they went back to the Revival.
Mm-hmm.
I think the tag team division in NXT is easily one of the best parts of the show every week. And I think there's a couple of good teams coming up behind. No one quite there. So I think that Tommaso and Ciampa will probably have at least another special in them. And I think if they do get the belts, it'll be at the next one. But this will for sure be an awesome match.
What do you think, Ben?
What I'm excited about with this match is with the Revival, you've got that old school NWA-style tag team who just can feast on good baby faces. They're just such consummate heels. Like, we see heels up and down the roster who are cool heels, who are getting all their spots in. The Revival is nothing like that. These are old school Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard heels. And I don't think anyone is designed to take their stuff quite like a Johnny Gargano. That's right. I said take their stuff, Aaron.
That's not – it was a human agreement before.
Hey, man, there's nothing to be ashamed of here, all right?
I'm sorry. I respect you.
But I do think Gargano is just a great face in peril to play with these guys. I think Ciampa is going to be great coming in from the outside. So I think this could even be better than the Revival American Alpha matches. And those are some next level matches.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these guys are just designed to work together. And I don't think they changed the titles here. I think Ciampa and Gargano are going to have another match down the line. They had too good a match in the Cruiserweight Classic not to be teasing to something else down the line between them. So I don't think they'll torpedo the Revival as two-time tag team champs just to give a quick reign to these guys. So I'm picking the Revival here, but I'm really excited about the match.
I think it's interesting, too, to say, like, for the tag division itself, if these four can go out and have an awesome match, like, we're not just American Alpha. You know what I mean? Like, we're a division. And I kind of felt that way about the women. Like when Charlotte finally lost the title and then all of a sudden Becky shows up and then Sasha gets go. You know, like, and things kind of blossomed and it wasn't just like Charlotte being the anchor or even Paige and Emma before that. Like, was it just a two-woman show? No, it wasn't. And we saw that. It was proved out. I think this match, if they go out there, have the match we know they can have, steal the show, then you can say, all right, it's a legacy. It's a credibility of the tag division. It's not just American Alpha carrying things.
Right. It's important for NXT as a brand to be able to show that they can cycle guys through, that they can lose people and still have credible divisions. You just touched on it with the women. And I think you're right. It's the tag team's turn to show, okay, we had this. We kind of saw the whole process of American Alpha going from two guys randomly put together to two guys who are pretty good to two guys who are excelling and carrying the division to the point where they had to be put on the main roster. I think this is a big chance for some of the younger teams to show that we can be in that American Alpha spot someday.
And I'm going to keep my prediction short and sweet, boys. Much like Tony searching for an album title back in 1990, I'm going with the Revival, Dash and Dawson to retain.
Oh, boy. All right, Nate. Well, you can. We'll stick with you right here. We're going to talk Andre Almas, Cien. As mentioned before, against Bobby Roode, the glorious one. And you know you're hearing his music here in one of these segments in and out. What do you think? I mean, it seems like an obvious win for Roode, but what does that say for Cien?
They really put themselves in a corner in this one because it's too early for Almas to take a loss right now. But Bobby Roode is, to me, even though he is – at that age, as a matter of fact, I think he's even older than Austin Aries. I think he has more of what the company looks for just by virtue of his size and by virtue of his ability to get over with his character. I think that they've got plans for him. Now, I don't know if those plans are on the main roster or are those plans to kind of step into that lead veteran role in NXT, but I think they've got plans for him. Plus, you can't go wrong with that theme music. So, I'm sticking with my TNA allegiances here and going with Bobby Roode.
I mean, the question really is, too, do we get something just straight up screwy? Like, does he not even wrestle? Does he pull the Eva Marie where he comes out and, and you know, basically says, screw this, I'm too good for this? Do we get just a cheap DQ finish to kind of protect both guys? Like, that wouldn't surprise me here of all the
So matches. You're saying you're hoping for a Bobby Roode wardrobe malfunction?
I'm never going to complain. It'll be glorious. What do you think, Aaron?
I hate Bobby Roode. I've just always hated this guy. I've never liked him. I hope that Andrade Aliem, whatever his name is, just puts him out of wrestling.
What? Jeez.
Andrade Aliem?
I can't look. It's as bad as John Travolta saying Adele Nazim.
That was like Travolta at the Oscars too. Yeah. Jeez.
The delicious. But I do think Bobby Roode will
Who
win.
Who is delicious?
I do think Bobby Roode will win, and I think he will be on to bigger things. I'm kind of hoping what happens with him is the same thing that happens with Eric Young in TNA. When, like, I really hated Eric Young. Like, watching TNA, I could not stand this guy. But then his head...
Ben's boy, watch out.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Watch, well, back off, you Scientologist.
He's a horrible man with lots of thetans around him. But I saw him wrestle in NXT and I actually quite enjoyed his performance. So I'm kind of hoping that, like, it was the TNA stuff that's hurting Bobby Roode, and I'd like to see more from him. But right now, I hate him.
There is a rumor floating out there amongst those at TNA Impact tapings. Spoiler. I don't know if it's actually a spoiler, but it's out there that James Storm had his final match tonight at the taping with TNA, and we may see him with his friend very soon. That's the word on Twitter, so I hope I didn't ruin it for you guys.
That would really be something if NXT, after James Storm spurned them to go back to TNA. That's really the ultimate sign of, number one, they just don't care about, you know, what anyone else is doing. They're going to do what's best for business no matter what if they were to take James Storm back. And I hope they do, because I think James Storm was excellent when he was in NXT for those couple matches. But that's really something.
Well, I mean, beer money on the main roster could be really good.
True.
Or they could stick it to him and put him with Braden Walker.
Oh, that'd be amazing. What a team.
We need beer money. I want a beer money New Day feud for the Royal Rumble. Book it.
If that happens, I will not watch wrestling ever again. If they do that little thing where they stomp their feet and throw their hands in the air, I'll throw my TV out the window.
All right, NXT Women's title on the line as Asuka takes on Bayley, who's looking to regain her title. Is this finally it for Bayley? Does she lose this match and finally ascend to the main roster? Or we've gotten swervalicious with NXT many times before, and do we get Bayley winning and keep going? Does Bayley stick around regardless? Or are we seeing her on Raw the night after SummerSlam? What do you think, Benjamin?
I think Bayley is headed out on top, in the sense that she's going to put on another great classic match for the Brooklyn crowd she loves so much. But this will be much more of the transition. I think when Asuka won the title initially, as much as I hate to question the folks at NXT and WWE, I think they were hedging their bets a little. They didn't know where they were going, so they took the title off Bayley so they could have another star if they wanted to jet her up to the main roster right with the draft. Then I think they got cold feet a little, decided to hold on to her for a bit. But I do think this will be Bayley's farewell match. I think her and Sasha are going to have some more classics in the future. She's got plenty to do with Charlotte. Got plenty to do all with all the folks. And I do think she will go to Raw, like you said, JR, because I think she fits in better there. But I pick Asuka to retain here.
Honestly, I forget about the brand split. I just assume Monday was
Monday. well, great call. Great call.
There you go. SmackDown needs her more, but yeah, she may fit.
No, she'll go to Raw. I don't think they'll split up the potential for her to go with Charlotte, to go with Sasha, to go with even with Dana Brooke. I think she fits more on Raw.
I don't think she fits in with the SmackDown girls at all.
No, like, definitely not. They just have no one though.
Well, it's like it's like SmackDown is the entertainment women brand, and Raw is the wrestling women brand, which is contrary to everything they've ever been in the past.
Well, I do think if Nikki does come back anytime soon, she's going to SmackDown. A, because of John Cena,
yep.
And B, because she could add the needed heel depth over there. Because Natty's, I mean, they're trying, but
not a heel.
Yeah, so no.
she can't do it anymore. Natty was able to be a heel in a world before everybody knew her and what a sweet person she is.
I think Cena should turn heel, Nikki should turn heel, and they should do like a Great Gatsby's thing with Miz and Maurice, where the four of them are just the king shits of the brand and jet setting around the country and partying up in New York's Long Island, just doing their thing.
Great Gatsby was the best possible description you could have used for that gimmick. That's amazing,
right? I mean, wouldn't that be awesome? The four of them just
and we're talking like Baz Luhrmann remake Great Gatsby here, like really obnoxious.
Yes, or I just picture them all in the 20s getup too, like seeing in the gangster thing, just doing.
Yep.
It up. That's what I want to see. Damn it!
They could have the vaudevillains as their thugs.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh God! Who do we got here, Nate? You want to talk about these women?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great match. That crowd will be into it from move one, from entrance one. But I think it's time for Bailey to move on, you know. And so I'm going to go with Asuka, not just because she's my WCW. And when I say that, I don't mean she's my Woman Crush Wednesday.
So
I mean
is the
she is literally
in the history of podcasting, Nate Milton.
I mean, literally, she's my WCW, and for anybody that knows me, they know how much I love WCW.
Wait. I thought Nia Jax was your WCW.
There's different days of the week. She's my TNA.
It's not different
Nia's
Wednesdays.
My TNA. Asuka's my WCW.
All right.
So
Nia Jax is his throwback Thursday.
Keep it a very. Keep it a very.
She throws him back.
Oh,
I mean, to me, Asuka is the next chapter. You know, I mean, we're already in the next chapter, but I think, you know, when you've got women like we talked about earlier, you know, Billie Kay and Ember Moon, and I that's just such a ridiculous name, both coming up, and I think that Asuka's the way to go. I love the character. I think she can play an effective face or an effective heel. So I think she's going to be the one that sticks around, particularly if Nakamura leaves. I think she'll be the one to kind of, her and Itami will be the ones kind of carrying that flag for the Asian folks out there, because I think that there's always going to be a need for that type of diversity in NXT. Asuka wins, but Bayley puts on a hell of a show. We get the hugs, we get the tears, big applause, and then sooner rather than later we see her on the main roster, probably on Raw.
So, Aaron, if Asuka brings Mabel and Mo, are you on board?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as long as she's the one doing the rapping.
Right. That's what I expect.
Yeah. But, you know, as much as I agree, I think Bailey's going to win. The pessimist in me, though, thinks
So you think Bailey's winning?
Oh, no, excuse me. I think Asuka's winning. Excuse me. I meant win, like, in general. Like, she's going up to the main roster and going on to success.
She wins in life.
Yeah, in life. However, the pessimist in me would be surprised in a way. I mean, we're going to talk about the main event in a second. Mm. But does anyone else think that this company will this company have two Japanese stars on top?
I think NXT is in its own world, though. Like, I don't think they see it as on top.
Well, I that's the only thing that would kind of surprise me, and I hope it happens, because I think they should be. But it also wouldn't surprise me for them to swerve us and bring Asuka up. Either. I feel she's just as ready as Bailey. Oh, not God. As a character, but as a wrestler.
If she comes up. I mean, I think they love her, but
yeah.
Some people are ready for Bailey. And I'm sitting next to Steve Willey at NXT, so I'm going to have to bring some extra medication when he sees her. But I do think, beyond just the ethnicity of the two competitors, I do think there's actually a tie-in to both matches. We'll talk about the main event now. That's Samoa Joe defending his title against Shinsuke Nakamura, or Shinsuke Nakamura. To me is, do they actually have both contenders lose and move up? I think Samoa Joe's winning, honestly. I
agree with you.
I don't think Joe's coming up to the main roster anytime soon. I don't think he's coming up until he's ready to wrap it up, and they're going to burn through some big matches with him and then be done. For now, I think he's going to be the gatekeeper, the ace of NXT. I think there's a higher chance of Nakamura losing and heading up to the main roster than him winning the NXT title.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think Nakamura, they had to put him down in NXT just for a little while to kind of get crowds used to him, give him a small pawn that he could dominate as a big fish. But I think he was always planned to be a main roster addition. If you look at the fact that that's where AJ Styles is, that's where Luke Gallows is, that's where Carl Anderson is, that's where all the New Japan acquisitions went. It just so happened they wanted to familiarize the American fans with Nakamura for a little while. So I think he goes, he gets his little run, and I agree with you. Justin, that Samoa Joe is going to be in NXT for quite some time. I think he's going to put together a dominant run as champ. I think he is going to be the face of the brand. I think Finn Balor did not pass the icon status to Nakamura. I think he passed it to Samoa Joe. And I think you're going to see Joe, Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, basically anyone who was in TNA in 2011 is going to be the core of NXT for a little while here. Yeah, yeah. They're going to be the core of NXT for a little while, and I think they'll be the veterans who work to help these true younger guys get over.
I think you got to look at where the value is. Like, where's Samoa Joe more valuable, and where's Nakamura more valuable? Nakamura is much more valuable on the main roster. Samoa Joe is much more valuable in NXT.
And they're paying Nakamura a lot of money to be on their developmental program, I believe.
Right. And I do think Joe will be up at some point. Just not yet. Because they're going to have to do like him and Cena on a pay-per-view. And, you know, there's other matches that they're going to want to do with him. Him and Rollins, him and Reigns. You know, like, there's good matches you can have with Samoa Joe. Just not yet. But that stands my question, Nate. What do you think? Like, do you see Bayley and Nakamura both? Like, is it too predictable that they're both going to lose their title matches, and then both show up on the big shows like next week or something like that?
Yeah, that's the only question in my mind, and that's why I'm going with Nakamura wins, but he still comes up anyway with the title. Mm. I think that's a statement to kind of introduce him to the main WWE universe proper. I think they've kind of worked themselves into a conundrum, though, because, yeah, you don't want to repeat the same scenario twice back to back in your two big matches on the card. But the moves that make sense in terms of coming up are Nakamura and Bayley. As much as I think Joe has been ready.
Right.
And it goes back to the
conversation. Joe's been ready since 2006.
Yeah. And it goes back to the conversation we had a couple weeks ago where it's like, man, I understand that they want to keep, you know, some cakes, to use an Aaron George phraseology. They still want to keep some cakes in the cupboard down at NXT.
Great,
but it should be, like, NXT to me, I think it should be, and maybe I'm being naive when looking at the business aspect of things, but to me, I think it should be more of your traditional developmental. And I think because it's now become this cool property, and I think Triple H has a lot of stock invested in NXT succeeding, that some guys are down there that shouldn't be, in my opinion. And some people are up on the main roster that shouldn't be, in my opinion. But all that being said, I think Nakamura wins, and he shows up. He shows up with the title, and as much as SmackDown needs him, I hope he would go to SmackDown. But part of me feels he's going to be on Raw, which is a mistake, man.
So does he? He's working both in your mind?
I think he works both for a little while.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, they kind of did that with Owen, so I mean, the precedent's there that they could do something similar. Aaron, what are your quick predictions before we move to SummerSlam? Does Nakamura win, or does he lose and head to the main roster? Nate's saying he's going to win and go to the main roster. What do you think?
Whoa, I think I see what you guys are saying about him kind of being big enough to go up now. My thought is that I don't think he's going to. I don't think they have anything for him to do now. I think more about when he's going to debut, and I see him more as a Royal Rumble or WrestleMania debut.
No, you're not wrong.
Yeah, like so in that aspect, that's why I think there's a good. I think he's going to win. I think he'll win the title, and maybe if anything, they'll give it back to Joe. Because I agree with you. I don't know if they're going to bring him up to the main roster, but yeah, for me, it's more about the timing of it. Like the timing of this match seems to indicate a Nakamura win for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, too. Like, yeah, what are they going to do, bring it up now and have him debut at whatever, Hell in a Cell or Backlash, where the pay-per-views coming up are?
No mercy.
Right.
By the same token, to play devil's advocate, I could see them thinking, okay, fall, traditionally our lean months, freaking out, we want to keep the network buys up, we want to do whatever, and see them rushing him to the main roster without a plan. But that's going to be the true test of Triple H has said none of these guys are getting called up unless we have a plan for them.
Right.
So I guess you watch Nakamura now is the living embodiment of whether or not that was the real deal or not.
Well, that's also kind of been proven to be untrue to a degree too.
No, I think it has been proven to be untrue.
Yeah.
And then he doubled down on it and kept saying it. So
yeah.
I think it's can he prove it with this guy who is maybe one of the biggest stars you could potentially produce out of NXT, but at the same time, clearly doesn't have a spot on the main roster right now.
And you guys who think he's coming up, where does he go? Does he go to Raw or does he go to SmackDown?
He should go to SmackDown. Like, it, just by looking at the two rosters side by side, SmackDown needs him more. But to me, the temptation's there. Like, not only have they shown us, but they've told us on their own television that Raw is still the flagship. You know, Raw is going to be getting the cruiserweights. Yes, it's 3 hours, and you need more content for 3 hours. But I still think, you know, and we're on week three. What was it, week three of the split? Mm-hmm. I think SmackDown, while it's a good show, it's still, man, like, there's way too much filler. And I don't mean filler in terms of segments that don't need to be there. But there's people in matches that I don't care about. Like, if I have to watch another Vaudevillains match, man, like, no.
Right.
Like,
well, let me ask you this, Nathan.
You got to go.
To join Ben in the Devil's Advocacy. Does that mean that Nakamura should go there? Or does that mean they need mid-card talent? Because I'd argue SmackDown is very top-heavy. Like, they have big-name guys. And I think their main event scene's pretty good. I think it's the underbelly of the show that needs the most filling. Like, I think if you want to move Nakamura to Raw and then move like Cesaro and a couple other, and maybe even Sami Zayn, who's just like lost on Raw right now, move those guys to SmackDown to solidify the middle of the show, because I think the top of the show is okay. Like, that's what I would do if I were there.
I think you can look at the fact that at the top of the show you've got Ambrose and Ziggler, you've got Bray Wyatt being mixed in successfully, you've got Cena in Styles in basically a 1B feud. You've got Randy Orton, who's a giant star. And then to speak to your point, JR, you have contending for the Intercontinental title like a true Island of Misfit Toys triple threat of Kalisto, Baron Corbin, and Apollo Crews, who literally would have been on that island in the classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer stop motion.
Or in that Aaron George Christmas play.
Yes.
And he will be.
Yeah. I think that shows you how lacking they are on the mid-card. And look, you're right. Sami Zayn doesn't have a SummerSlam match. He has nothing to do.
And there's 11 matches.
I know.
Yeah. And really, Kevin Owens doesn't really have a match either.
Right.
Like, he's thrown into. Now, wouldn't the mid-card slot be a nice place for Samoa Joe on SmackDown to play devil's advocate, since that's what we're all doing?
If you play devil's advocate on devil's advocate, does that make it like angel's advocate or something? Stairway to heaven?
We're way too much into the English language right now, and we've lost like all the viewers.
Quick, speak French. All right, why don't we transition to Sunday, NXT in the books. Let's look at SummerSlam. Back in Brooklyn, second straight year. Last year's show, I think, exceeded expectations. I think many going into the show weren't expecting a ton when you looked at the card, and it over-delivered. I'm not going to say it was, you know, the greatest show of all time, but I think it over-delivered. This year, they'll be hard-pressed to not under-deliver, because on paper, this card looks great. And, you know, will it live up to the billing? And like I mentioned, it's 11 matches. None of these are, as of yet, slated for any kind of pre-show that I see. So I think they're all, as of right now, considered on the show. And, of course, the show is supposed to be like 6 hours or whatever when you factor in pre-show and everything else. So I think it's 4 hours proper and 2 hour pre-show is what's being touted. So let's go match by match. Some of the bottom ones we can breeze through quickly. But so we do have the obligatory six-woman tag team match, like John D'Amato. So I can only put it's the Who Would You Do match, and that's just put Anthony Armento on the spot. But we have Carmella, Becky Lynch, and Naomi versus Natalia, Eva Marie, and Alexa Bliss. SmackDown somehow finding depth enough to do a six-woman tag. I mean, I think this just solely exists to do something with Eva, that, you know, continuing her trend of showing up and not wrestling. And I think the faces win this one.
Oh, I disagree. I think this is the easy place to give Eva Marie a win without still not having to give her a singles credibility. You can have the other girls do.
Yeah, hides on the apron.
Yep, the other girls do all the work. She jumps in and gets the pinfall. I think that's the right thing to do and exactly what's going to happen.
Okay. And I hope they have that voiceover guy narrate what she does in the match.
Yep.
That'd be the best.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of fake Robert Goulet.
As long as he brings crime time out.
I think what you're going to see is the heels take the win. Natalia will probably be doing 90% of the work. Eva Marie will probably have some type of issue and leave and then come back just to get the pin. And then I think that's how they play that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I changed my vote. That's what's going to happen. She's going to stand on the apron and then get the pin. That's what's going to happen.
You were blinded by Naomi's new ring gear temporarily.
Oh, my goodness. How quiet will the crowd be for Carmella when she comes out?
Oh.
Poor girl.
Negative pop.
She's got to change up that gimmick, man, because she's come across as not even a B-level imitation of Enzo. She's like a D-level.
You're a generous man, Nate.
Copy.
Who was it that they said of like the negative heat pop that Vince used to say? It wasn't Malenko, was it? Who was the guy that – I thought it was someone they joked about when it was like dead silence. It was the someone pop. Anyway. Speaking of dead silence, we have Sheamus out here for the first match in the best of seven series taking on Cesaro. You know, I'm at least giving these guys something to do, so kudos. Like, best of seven has worked in the past for guys. I don't know if it'll work for them, but in ring, the match is going to be good. Like, Sheamus is good in the ring and Cesaro's awesome. So I don't think the in-ring stuff will be bad. I don't think it'll be like to me, the worst series was Cena and Booker. The matches were terrible. Booker Benoit was really good both times. So, you know, maybe hopefully it's more like that. I think it'd be ballsy and awesome if they had Cesaro sweep him. I don't think they're going to do it because these always go seven.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the sack to pull it off. But I think Cesaro sweeping him would be like really strapping the saddle on and saying, all right, we're going to get behind him. I think what would be cool is if he sweeps him and then they find a way to like have Shane steal him away. So like he finally gets his respect. He sweeps Sheamus. Raw's ready to utilize him correctly. And then as an FU, they switch him to SmackDown. Like, fuck you. You didn't believe in me until I went out there and destroyed your boy Sheamus in four straight matches. And now you want something to do with me. And I'm way overbooking this. Never going to happen. But that's what they should
do. At least, if they're going to match them up week after week, at least there's now a reason.
Right. Oh, that too. Yeah, they're likely going to fight seven straight weeks anyway. So
yeah.
To go on further, though, I think the thing that's missing from this that's been so great about the multi-person series in the past is they need some stakes on it.
Right.
Like they could really say like, okay, winner gets a U.S. title shot, and we all know that realistically, you know, Zack Ryder got a U.S. title shot just for winning a tag match one week.
Banging Emma, he got that.
Yeah, exactly. As an attaboy from Vince. But, you know, they could artificially inflate the importance of the U.S. title and have these guys have something that they're fighting over. It's two birds with one stone.
The problem is they don't really know what stakes are anymore.
Mm.
Like, they'd be fighting for a WrestleMania moment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, this is what they should do, in my mind, is not have it be for the United States title because no one cares. Like you said,
the Universal title?
Yes, because you have these off shows anyway now, like all these single brand shows. Like, why not give one of these guys a title match against either Balor or Rollins? Let it rip. Just throw it on one of those shows, you know?
Because then they'd have to do it for three straight pay-per-views. Don't you understand the system?
Right. Yeah, this is very much like a Lloyd Benson, Dan Quayle moment here when I'm looking at these guys. It's like, No, WWE. You know, I knew Booker T and Chris Benoit. That best of seven feud was a friend of mine. And this best of seven right here, you know Booker T and Chris Benoit. You know, I think both guys are capable. Like, even Sheamus. I don't think – the problem with Sheamus has never really been his in-ring. It's just been his character. So I think the matches themselves will be good in a vacuum. But the problem is, like Ben was alluding to, what are the stakes? You know, if they don't do something – that advances Cesaro, like JT was suggesting, then this was just a place filler, a placeholder, you know. And not to mention the fact that we're having the best of seven when we've already had like two or three matches between these guys the past couple weeks. It's like, can we just retroactively add those matches into the best of seven so this doesn't take two damn months? But that being said, I'm gonna go with Sheamus just because. I have a feeling this thing is going to go seven. They're not going to give Cesaro the sweep. So, yeah, let's go Sheamus.
What a shit everyone's cereal, Nate.
You know what would be great is what I could also live with is if Sheamus went up 3-0 and then Cesaro had to storm back.
Right, and sweep him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Especially if they were cheesy wins.
Nothing yeah.
Clean. All right. Speaking of cheesy and not clean, The Miz has his Intercontinental Championship on the line. Against Apollo, as many have been calling him Creed, but of course it's Apollo Crews. I think they should just change his name at this point, but to Apollo Crews.
They wanted you to think that. You don't name him that.
Right, without putting it in your head. Do you guys think, Ben, do you think Cruz wins, if this is what they've been building Miz up for, this long reign to transition to a guy like Cruz, does Cruz mow through him? Or are we not ready to end the Miz experiment?
I think he's going to mow through him. I think he's Warrior in 88. I think he's going to get a quick, decisive win, put him over, make him the guy to be IC champion. I do think this is what you've been building up Miz for. You're not going to get too many other opportunities to have a young star just instantly go over like that. And I think it'll be I think this will probably be one of the opening matches so that they can have a memorable moment and Apollo Crews can go.
Is he the right choice, though, Ben, for that?
You know, it's tough for me to say because I think as a talent, he's the right choice. He's got all the intangibles. He can work in the ring. He's decent on the mic. He's got all the stuff. But they haven't really been booking him very well. They really killed him during his initial run when he first came in, and he just had nothing to do for weeks at a time. If he had been in hot feud since he got called up, or if he even had been allowed to stay in NXT a little longer and maybe debuted, because I think what they've done with him on SmackDown the first few weeks have been great, but I think he's still suffering from the months he was on Raw doing nothing. So that was a nice way to not answer your question. I think he's the right guy. I would pick him.
What do you think, Aaron? Is he winning? Is he squashing him? And is he the guy?
I think Miz is going to retain. I think Miz is their mid card on SmackDown. So I think taking the belt off him might not be the wisest thing. Is he the right guy? If he is, I don't think it's now, because they haven't bothered to give him any storyline going into this match. Other than I earned this shot, so I'm going to try and win, you know? I think if you're going to make someone big over Miz with a new guy, you have to give him some kind of build. Like, I mean, I would imagine it like he loses this match and then doesn't get another match for a couple months and then wins that. Like, make the people want to see him win, which I don't think they've done a good job of here.
I'm kind of with you. I do think Miz is the mid-card guy, and I do think he sneaks out a win. I think this is those ones where everyone kind of takes Cruz and then Miz gets the cheap pin. Like, it seems to be building that way to me, that I don't know if Cruz is quite ready, and I don't know if they see it in him yet. What do you think,
yeah,
Nate?
Yeah, to me, Carl Weathers is going to have to wait at least another month or so. you son of a bitch. Some damn fool accused you of being the best. I think what we're going to see is Miz is going to take this one just because people aren't invested in Cruz. And I think we're going to see some blatant, outright cheating to kind of build up sympathy. But they got to continue to build on this guy. And I think we're going to see Cruz take that next step at No Mercy, because that'll be, you know, SmackDown kind of making its own statement. I think we're going to see a lot of these SmackDown matches get resolved at that show rather than here at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And the Miz act is still working, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we could get a thing where Miz walks, you know?
Yeah.
He gets countered out, and then they do a lumberjack or a whatever you can lose by DQ or count out kind of thing at No Mercy, like you said.
I'd love to see him stretch Miz out for, you know, let him hold the title for a year. Let him become the longest reigning guy. It seems impossible in this day and age, but that would be awesome to watch.
And that's how you get that Ultimate Warrior moment.
Yeah. Right.
I'd like to stretch Maurice out, but beyond that, let's talk tag team action here. We have Enzo and Big Cass taking on Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. I love the Jericho-Owens stuff. I think they're great together. And I want them, and I want it to be viewed by people as, they're not sticking these guys in a team because they get nothing else. Like, they can be aligned. Singles guys have tag matches, work together, and then eventually, because they're two pricks, they screw each other and then have a match. Like, I'd love to see them last for a few months in this kind of tenuous friendship, kind of using each other to get by. Maybe Owens gets a title match and Jericho helps, you know, something like that, and then eventually they clash. But I think for right now, it's really cool that they kind of have these guys, you know, as an alliance.
Jericho's really underrated as a guy who does well in tag teams, especially mm-hmm. heel tag teams. Mm-hmm. If you look back at the stuff he did with Big Show, that was probably the most entertaining Big Show's been in over a decade. If you look way back to WCW, he had a great heel tag team with Eddie Guerrero, which was exactly what you were describing, JR. It was just they weren't pursuing the tag team titles or anything like that. They just happened to be two guys whose attitudes aligned and they would help each other out. I think this is the perfect place for Jericho right now. I think he can really help build Kevin Owens to the next level. And then if you want to have them split up and make Owens the face at some point, Jericho's a great first opponent for him. With all that said, I think, you know, I hope they don't break them up in this match because I do think they're going to lose. And I hope it's not them going, them blaming each other for the loss and immediately splitting up because I think there's more you can do with these guys.
I think this is definitely going to be the start of the sowing of those seeds, Ben, because I think what we're going to see is Owens getting a bit of a refresh because he's kind of been lost in the shuffle on Raw after the brand split. So I think Enzo and Cass win this match. They get that big moment in Brooklyn. And then we're going to see Jericho and Owens have their little deal off to the side. And then I don't know if that goes past. Was it Backlash, the next one? I don't know if that goes past Backlash or not. But I think that's going to be Jericho's role. You know, he's kind of in that. He's kind of in that mechanics role. And what I mean by that is he's the guy that can give you a tune-up before you go on to bigger and better things. You know, he did that for AJ.
He's a gatekeeper, yep.
Yep, and I think he's going to do that for Owens as well because I think that there's going to be some opportunities. I don't think that the rosters are going to be as set as some people think they are. I think we're going to see some movements and movement going on, and I think that movement is going to allow Kevin Owens some forward momentum. So my pick is with the Certified G's and Chris Jericho, his knack for picking tag team partners that can make a great name with him aside. They're gonna take the L.
What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, like I love the way the team came together. That it's not a traditional thing. Mm-hmm. Like Jericho is making up the name of a tag partner, and no one's just like, "All right, that's not a real person. I'll just be your tag partner." Like a moment of niceness in this whole thing. But yeah, I love about this whole thing is I love that there's a tag team feud that's not for the belts. That's important. Because I feel like it's been a long time, and it's also interesting how they're booking Enzo and Cass. Like they really are treating them like top stars, despite the fact that they're not throwing them in the tag title picture. So I don't know. I really love kind of how this match came together. I think it's really neat and different, and I'm sure Enzo and Cass are going to take it.
When Enzo and Cass do eventually win the tag team titles, I think it's going to be a much bigger deal than any tag title win in recent memory has been. I think it's going to be so emotional for people who have – because they never even won the NXT tag team titles. These guys have literally never won a title. I think it's going to be such an earned moment. You know, it's going to feel like when Bayley won her first title.
Yeah, that might be something to draw out to WrestleMania.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, if you get the titles on a heel team, maybe on Sunday, and then draw it out. Yeah, because right now they don't even need them, and that's the best part about their act.
I can definitely see this opening the show as well.
Oh, yeah.
Get the crowd fired up right away with Enzo and Cass. And no, it'll be a great match, too. All right, you referenced the tag team titles, Aaron, and we have the New Day taking on Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. Of course, Big E is on the shelf, so it'll be Xavier Woods and Kofi. Is this finally the end of New Day's historic run here?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's time, despite all the stupid doctor skits they've been doing in the last 2 weeks. I think it's time for the New Day. Is Big E actually wrestling, or are they going with that he's hurt still?
No, he's hurt still. I mean, I think he'll show up probably at the end.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
And they might do something crazy too, where like not crazy. I mean, they've done it before, where like Xavier gets hurt and they stretch him out, and Kofi's going 2-on-1, and then Big E like comes out and takes a spot, like kind of banged up, and then they take kind of a hard fought loss that way.
Oh, I wish they would wear masks. That would be the best. Like
oh my
the killer
God.
Bees.
I can't believe they haven't tried that yet.
Awesome. I know. No, I think it's done. I think it's time. I think it's time to let the New Day do something different. And I don't necessarily mean break them up, but just get them out of the tag team title picture for a while. Because for me personally, they're a bit stale. I know they're still super popular, but I think there's mileage in having them as champions for a bit. Sorry, as challengers for a bit after this.
And you wonder, too, if this is setting up subtly for Big E to start working on his own and let Xavier and Kofi still be a team. Like, they'll all still be aligned. There's no turns coming. But let Big E start going more out on his own. Ben, the question here is, do you keep the titles on New Day because Enzo and Cass beating them would mean more to end their run, or do you put them on the club because you don't want to split the crowd when you finally give Enzo and Cass their big moment?
I think you put them on the club both because you don't want to split that, but also just because I think there's potential for the club to have a nice little run of their own and really establish a heel tag team being on top. I mean, even when New Day was with heels and they were the tag team champions, they weren't the kind of tag team champions who are just like Steve Williams, Terry Gordy, destroy every team in your path, heel tag team champions. And I think there's a lot of cool stuff you can do with the club just running rampant and destroying other tag teams till they only have Enzo and Cass left, and that's the story you build to. I think if you have Enzo and Cass against New Day, you're splitting the pop. I don't think it needs as much, oh, they ended the record-setting reign. I think it just ends as they took it from the other guys we love. And I hope that what you said about the New Day not being broken up goes for what's going on too, because I would love to see them just as, you know, a faction of guys who support each other, but it just so happens they're all going after singles titles. I think that would be the next interesting iteration of the New Day.
I'm with you. What do you think, Nate?
I think the New Day retains for a couple of reasons. One, I don't know if the club is at that level yet. Like, they've cooled off a bit since being split from AJ. And the doctor stuff, to me, I don't think that was the proper way to go about this feud. Plus, you know, I think it's going to be a big moment when they win, because along with Enzo and Cass and probably Brock, the New Day is probably going to get the biggest pop on this card. And so I think New Day retains after the match. The club probably is hitting them with the beatdown, and then Big E probably comes out and makes the big save, and then we get a big New Day celebration and the crowd erupts. But I do like the idea going forward of Enzo and Cass versus the New Day. And I think there's a way that you can tell the story. And I think we've seen shades of this before when they've had a chance to interact, that these are guys that don't particularly have a problem with each other, but they both want the same thing. And I think there's a way to tell that story and maintain both guys' status in the eyes of the fans and have this really engaging match, because I think that's part of the problem now with the tag team division. Like, in an Enzo and Cass match, let's say, versus the Shining Stars, you're engaged with one team, but you don't give a damn about the other team. And I think this would be one of the few instances where the crowd would be invested in both teams. And I think that might be an interesting way going forward. I don't know if that's the way they're going to go, but in terms of this match here in Brooklyn and at SummerSlam, I'm going to put my money on a New Day.
If you do it right, though, Nate, couldn't you have the club be that other team that the crowd cares about just by virtue of the fact that they took away New Day's titles? These were the guys who ruined New Day, who took New Day off the pedestal. I mean, if you're looking at traditional wrestling booking and you want to get that heel team over, isn't that how you do it?
I think so, but my issue with the club right now is, and Lord knows I didn't like that Wyatt compound crap that they did a couple of weeks ago, but I think the Wyatts were a more imposing threat to the New Day in opposition to what the club has been presented as these past few weeks. Like, the club, I know as a fan that they're a credible team, but what they've shown me on TV, you know, these guys, there's not that much that separates them from the Dudley Boys, if you're being honest. So I think, you know, the club as your top heel team, I think that could be something, but I think as currently constituted, they just don't strike me as, man, that's the team the New Day's really got to be worried about. Even though they took out Big E, it still feels like they're a mid-card team instead of this big threat that could threaten the New Day's record-setting reign.
Well, I think, I mean, just to cap it there, I think what you need to make them a big threat is to let them beat New Day.
And hurt New Day.
Yeah.
Like, not just beat them, like, hurt them. And maybe take them off. They'll probably never do this, but I'd be okay if they took them off TV for a few weeks. Like, take away something the fans like. That's how you build heat on somebody.
Oh, Vince would never do that.
Nope. Nope. No. He likes to make people unhappy, right? Like, you're dating someone in the company? Well, you're not going to be on the same show.
We make movies.
The bigger question is, which of these teams is going to transition the title to the Hardys when they come in?
Broken Matt and the Mule.
That's the money feud right there. New Day versus the Hardys. Mm-hmm. You got Francesca versus Vanguard One. Senior Benjamin.
I want Matt Hardy versus Mick Mahan.
It's coming. All right, let's stick with the title picture here. Charlotte going after her women's title against Sasha Banks. Dana Brooke banned from ringside. On paper, this seems like a Sasha wins and keeps the good times rolling, but these are the type of matches where Doty likes to pull the rug out from everyone. Is there any inkling, anyone, of Charlotte winning this match? Do we get some tomfoolery? Does the Nature Boy return, perhaps, and help his daughter win? Does someone else debut? Does she beat Sasha clean and set up for a feud with Bayley? Or does Sasha just retain and put the feud to bed?
The only reason I could see a Charlotte win is, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I think there's been a disconnect between the character Sasha Banks and the in-ring Sasha Banks. Like I think the fans still love cheering for Sasha when she's actually wrestling, but I don't know if her promos and her sitting at ringside, you know, doing commentary, I don't know if that's really connected, you know, with the fans the way that she did when she was chasing. So that's the only thing that could give me a bit of pause, but everything else, every other sign would say that Sasha retains because, you know, this is kind of a homecoming in a sense because her biggest match before this also happened in Brooklyn. So I think
it was a loss.
And I think this is she comes back to Brooklyn and she finally makes good. She retains the title. And I think that, you know, things going full circle because on TV, the way that they've been kind of portraying it, I think as much as I like this feud, I think we're getting close to the end of this because Nia Jax is somebody that I think could be Sasha's next opponent.
I could see Charlotte winning and then Bayley comes up and Sasha turns on her saying, you know, the fans loved me. Now you're here. And they turn on me, you know, something along those lines. Things like you said, Nate, I think she's better suited as a heel. Go ahead, Ben, sorry.
No, it's fine. I think the most telling thing here is that the Sasha win on Raw was kind of a hot shot decision, and I think she was always intended to win at SummerSlam. So I think she will win at SummerSlam. But I think the beauty of the division as it's constituted now is if you take Charlotte off the table, if you take Charlotte out of the feud with Sasha, that frees Charlotte up to feud with Bayley. That way you have a great women's feud that has nothing to do with the title. It just has to do with, you know, good versus evil. And then you can have Nia Jax going after Sasha Banks. Nia wins the title. Bayley goes after her. Sasha swaps back to Charlotte. There's a lot they can do. There's a lot of pieces to move in and out of place here, even if they do keep the title on Sasha.
Yeah, I'm with Ben. I'm pretty sure they took this off the title to off the title change off the show to pop that number one to make the first Raw feel special. I also get the feeling that there might be a lot of title changes on the show. So well, there will be for sure because with there's a new title being given. My question is when did Sasha Banks get so happy? Mm-hmm. Like she used like you're right about the disconnect. Like she's not the boss anymore. She's just this happy woman. Like she's smiling, she's laughing all the time. Like, it's, you're right about the disconnect, and I think that's interesting. And I don't know what's happening there. I don't know if she's just having such a good time out there that it's just shining through.
Having fun, Maggle.
Maggle, having fun.
Well, and the thing is, like, she's smiling, but the words, the substance of her promos are still in that boss character. And yeah. So, like, it doesn't fit. So I think she's either got to be a full-fledged heel or they've got to find some way to update this character so that she resonates as a babyface because the fans are still behind her, but it's just not clicking right now, at least for me.
I look at it really as they gave her the title earlier than they were expecting, and I've seen these last 3 weeks as basically they're treading water and they're kind of in a holding pattern. She wasn't ready to be champ yet. The promotion wasn't ready to support her being champ yet. And I think after SummerSlam, we're going to really see if she sinks or swim. I don't really want to judge based on just the last few weeks. I don't think this was the intention. I think this was an audible.
Let me throw this out there. Is there a chance of a double switch where she becomes the boss because Dana turns on Charlotte and Sasha, she goes on Sasha's team and Sasha becomes the boss of the Divas and they do a flip on the two of them?
If they do that, they better move Charlotte off Raw.
Yeah.
Because she won't survive as the second – because she's not – like she's so much better as a heel, right? Yeah. And she just won't – she won't have any time on TV as an underling heel to Sasha Banks.
Underling face. She'd be the face.
Oh, that's it. But even if like – let's say they do that and they try to keep Charlotte heel.
Oh, right. Yeah.
She's just got no place at that point.
Right. No, I mean Charlotte's way better
Bayley
as a
heel. Because as soon as Bayley comes up, if she comes up to Raw – There's really no other room for any other babyface, including Sasha. Right. And so I think, yeah, it's a good problem to have in the sense that you've got a lot of women that are capable in the ring. It's just a matter of kind of finding out where we slot them character-wise.
Well, like the saying goes, Nate, you can never have too much pitching, right? Something's going to happen at some point. So, another title match here. Rusev, the United States champion, doing some very inspired yeoman's work as of late, taking on Roman Reigns. probably the spot Reigns should have been in like a year and a half ago.
Yep. Yes.
Battling Rusev for the United States title, but here we are. Rusev and Lana have been fantastic. You know, they had a great match on Raw that Reigns won. And to me, that foreshadows maybe Rusev taking this one. And that's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm going with. What do you think, Aaron?
Well, I hope Rusev wins. look, I agree. I think if you did this match at WrestleMania 31 instead of John Cena fighting Rusev, mm-hmm. I think the crowd would be much warmer to Roman Reigns to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, if they built him the way they've built everyone else who's ever been a megastar.
Early 2015 fucked up a lot of things. they're still feeling, like, serious ripple effects from their decisions between January and March of 15.
Yeah, because, I mean, you put Cena in the position. He ends Rusev's streak, which just destroys Rusev for a long time. Mm-hmm. And instead, like, I mean, every star they've ever had, like, it's been, like, sometimes tag, but Intercontinental, then – Or U.S., then WWE Championship. I don't know why they change it. But are they going to – the question is, are they going to keep punishing Roman Reigns, I think. And I think his punishment is probably over, and I think he wins the U.S. title. But I don't want him to.
Yeah, I think you're dreaming, Rosero, if you think Rusev is going over Vince's boy here. But I think the nice thing about the work Rusev's done is that if they have a good – solid, well-fought match here, Rusev still remains a credible threat and could even be someone who feuds with, say, a Universal Champion down the line. He's definitely in that mix. I don't think this is going to be like after Cena routed Rusev and he was just destroyed and became a comedy character feuding with Dolph Ziggler. I think Roman's going to get the title here and give his chance to become, you know, kind of the ultimate warrior as the Intercontinental Champion. Maybe this is that SummerSlam 88 moment. But hopefully without the 30-second win.
Yeah, I think from Rusev, what we really need more than anything else, he's going to need a killer heel promo before this. Because if you look at the way that this feud has been set up, if I just name what has happened without giving you the nationality or the names of the participants, Roman Reigns is the heel, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're messing with my woman. We got this expensive cake. It's probably red velvet, and you're messing up my celebration. So I think Rusev's really got to cut one of those old school Sergeant Slaughter during the Iraqi War, Iron Sheik type of anti-American promos, because that is really the only thing that is going to babyface Reigns, especially in this crowd. And
nothing's going to babyface Reigns.
That's the only thing that can come close to it is playing the patriotism card, and I think they've got to.
Sorry, Nick, go on.
I was going to say, they've got to deal the entire deck. Not just one card. They got to deal the entire deck because Roman Reigns still, you know, even though he had a little punishment, he is still in the plans for this company to be a big deal sooner, if not later. And I think that this is just kind of step one to his redemption. And it's a shame they've kind of given this guy his career trajectory. They've done it backwards, but he's going to win. And I think it'll be a hell of a match, though, because, you know, Roman Reigns, despite his character issues, and I mean that on screen and, you know, wellness policy wise, he has gotten better in the ring, man. Like, he's not as stiff in the ring. So I think the match will be a fun match. Roman Reigns wins. But it'll be a hell of a job that they've got ahead of him if they want this guy to continue to be a babyface.
Should Reigns have done a bus tour across America?
Oh, that would have been great. Instead of the Lex Express, it would have been the
Reigns train.
Yeah, the Reigns train.
Reigns train.
There you go.
Oh boy. Did everyone talk about this? Who else is left here? Who wants to talk about this match? Anyone?
I think we all had our say.
Okay, good. All right, John Cena, AJ Styles. Of course, AJ won the first bout between them, and as history would have it, John Cena usually wins this next one. However, whoever wins the match for the WWE World title is likely to be a face. AJ Styles seems like a very likely choice. to be the next contender to that title. I think he's the likely choice to win that title in the coming months.
Yep.
And then you can do your John Cena win later on if you want to give him the title back. I think AJ wins this match, and I think he does it clean.
I agree with you. I think AJ, they're positioning him to be a huge deal. I think he's won over not just the crowds and the fans. I think AJ's a guy who has won over the front office. He's won over Vince. He's won over Triple H. And I think they see him as being a huge deal. And I also think John Cena is going off to shoot some more TV. I think this is – we're going to see the beginning of truly unselfish John Cena. Not that Cena's been, you know, selfish behind the scenes for years, but I think we're going to start seeing Cena – the character is going to start giving back a little and putting guys over. And I do think he'll put over AJ Styles here.
Nate, do you think it's interesting that AJ hasn't really wrestled since the brand split? Do you think they're purposely giving him some time off to rehab his back a bit?
I think so. And, you know, AJ, he's not exactly old, but he's not a spring chicken either. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, it's smart because I think this could be the match that steals the show. Because John Cena is... like underrated, John Cena is a hell of a big match performer. And I think AJ Styles.
Big match John.
Big match John. And we all know how great AJ Styles is. So I think this is going to be another great match between the two. AJ Styles will win because I do see him in the cards for the WWE Championship going forward. But I think it's going to be a hell of a match. And in terms of Cena, yeah, I would agree, man. In terms of big name guys, over the past 25, 30 years when it comes to the WWF / WWE, you could make the argument that he's been one of the more unselfish top guys as opposed to somebody like a Hogan or a Triple H or anybody like that. And so I think John Cena has no problem doing the right thing, letting AJ take this one so he can go make movies or TV or whatever the hell he wants to do. So, yeah, AJ Styles, another one for TNA. It's one more for the good guys.
Yeah, I think I'd go Styles also. You know, what struck me, I watched a lot of the build to the show in the last couple days. And what struck me is that for all the heat, well, not heat, I guess, for all the flack AJ gets for not being a great promo, it really kind of comes, he really looks like he hates John Cena. Like in his mannerisms and the way he talks to him. And I think it's good. Like, we're all talking about how we wanted more people to be friends on the show. Which is nice, and I like friends, but I think the show needs hate sometimes, and I think he was really bringing it in this build, and I really hope he goes over. I think he'll be a great challenger for the next champion, and you're right. Cena generally is pretty unselfish. For me, it's never been Cena the problem. It's how they book him after.
Absolutely.
Like, it's almost like the company panics, and it's like, oh, he has to win like the next 10 otherwise.
Right.
You know, so I think it'll be I think it'll be the match of the night, and I think AJ will win.
And Cena kind of sort of got the win back in the six man anyway, so it's not like he's lost. You know, he's not coming directly off the loss, and that's already been so long ago. And you know, the other feuds, he would always be like 3 or 4 weeks later, directly after it, he'd get the win back. I mean, I think they know what they have in AJ. I think they know, unlike Rusev or Owens, where those guys were younger. AJ's, I don't say he's on borrowed time, but how much time do they have with him to be a top guy? Probably only a couple years max. The money he's making, the way he's over, I mean, I don't know how they don't just put the title and let him be the top guy in SmackDown in the next, like, 3 months. So the title he may be fighting for is, of course, the WWE World Championship. That's Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler, whose feud since the draft has been really good. Rehabilitation of Dolph Ziggler has been fantastic in a very short time. The great segment on SmackDown this week where Dolph got his retribution. Of course, 2 weeks ago, Ambrose DDT'd him. This week, he hit the super kick during the Miz TV. I'm really looking forward to this match. I think Dolph is on a redemption tour. I think he comes up short. I think Ambrose wins the match. But I think it'll be a really, really good match, and I think they've done a hell of a job. If there's one winner of the brand split so far, it's been Dolph Ziggler. What do you think, Aaron?
I agree. I definitely agree. I never thought that between the two, I would that Dolph Ziggler would be the more manic in his promos. But he's been kind of like a man possessed, and I like it. I like it a lot. I do think he's going to fall short here, though. I don't think he's going to win the title, which is kind of too bad because, like, the whole kind of thing has been based around Dean Ambrose telling him he's not that good. Like, you're not as good as you think you are. And I think he's going to fall short here, which I'm not sure if it'll hurt him or not. If they keep him strong after, it'll be okay, but they don't have a great history of doing that. So
I'll be curious if they turn him heel, like where he finally snaps.
Yeah.
That'd be great too. Like that brand needs some top heels.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz right now they just have AJ.
Bray.
But Bray, it's a mixed thing, right? Like half the time the people are cheering for him. But yeah, no. I'd be down for a Dolph Ziggler heel turn.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what we're going to get, but I don't know. There's this little part of me. Number one, I'm definitely going to be rooting for Ziggler to win the title. I think he's the guy you want to see. And there's just such a great story they've created here that you kind of want to see them end it and tell the right final chapter, which is Dolph Ziggler. Like you said, it's a redemption story. If it's truly a redemption story, he needs to win the title in the end. I think it would be different if he was older, if he was a guy who was on his way out soon. But I don't know. There's just something crazy about me that I think Dolph Ziggler is going to walk out of there with the title.
I just have no faith in them doing the redemption story.
Right. Mm.
It's like they don't understand the beats of that story.
Mm-hmm. Like, and it also wouldn't shock me if Ziggler wins and then loses to AJ like Tuesday on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Like that wouldn't shock me either.
And then they still treat it as though he's completely redeemed.
Right.
Well, you know, JT, there's an old saying in Tennessee. It goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me. You can't fool me again. And WWE, you can't fool me again with Dolph Ziggler, man. Like, much respect to this man. And, you know, you got to respect anybody that will kick someone's head clean off of their face, as he said on SmackDown this past week. But no. Like, the equity and the good faith in this character is gone. You know, I don't see how, as a fan, as good as he's done in terms of trying to rebuild his character the past few weeks, no, history shows that you can't buy this stock. And so, yeah, I'm going with Dean Ambrose, even though out of the two, I think Ziggler would make a much more compelling champion. And that's no slight on Ambrose. It's just he really has not connected with me as champion. You know, obviously the guy's talented, but for whatever reason, I liked him better when he was chasing. So Dean Ambrose wins, and I think that sets up AJ Dean as your next title program.
Yeah, I think that plays into it too. I don't think they're going to wait too long to put the title on AJ.
No.
So it's like you almost don't want Ziggler to win it just to lose it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think AJ is going to win it at the pay-per-view at the latest, and it really wouldn't shock me if they do something this week on SmackDown to really like kind of pull in a big, you know, either that or maybe they wait till the football or something. I could see them doing it on TV for some reason. All right, in our other big title match, the Universal Championship, brand new title,
yes.
We have Finn Balor taking on Seth Rollins. And Rollins has, been having a hell of a run, especially since he got out of the Authority shadow and came back from his injury. Balor, and I guess we could talk about this as well separately, debuted the Demon gimmick on Raw. There's been a lot of split across that. Should they have saved it for the pay-per-view? Was it smart to maybe hook people in to want to see the pay-per-view by showcasing it? I mean, I don't think you can have Balor be the Demon and lose, because then you just automatically slaughter the whole idea of it. So as soon as they said he's going to be the Demon, I think it telegraphs the win. Every word out there is that they know what they have in Balor and they just want to throw the rocket on him and run with it. I think it's Rollins to me is a safe pick in their eyes. And safe isn't going to get it done, especially heading into football season. Rollins had his run. He's been great. I think it's Balor's time. I think you're going to see what you got, put the rocket ship on him, and let it rip. And I think he's a Demon, and I think he wins, and I think it's a great match. What do you think, Ben?
I'm going to go with the safe pick. I'm going to go with Seth Rollins. No, I think that Finn Balor gets established here just by being in the match. And I also think Balor's win is something you want to build to a little more. I agree. In a perfect world, I would have held off the Demon a month or two. I think you want to wait until those Raw specific shows to, do the big stuff like Finn Balor winning a title. Yeah. I don't know. My gut just says he doesn't get the belt here because he hasn't done anything to really earn it yet. I think they need to have Rollins, you know, on top for a little while to make you want to see Balor as the champion. I think you need to have Balor not as the champion in order to increase the crowd's desire to see him. So I'm going to, everything you said makes total sense, but I'm going to go against it and say that I think Rollins gets the belt here.
All right, Nate.
I'm going to speak Ben's language here. You know, first of all, when it comes to the Demon issue, and you know, Ben came on the Kings of Sport, this past a couple months ago, I guess now, to talk about Captain America: Civil War.
Great movie.
And spoiler alert, everybody, but one of my favorite scenes in Captain America: Civil War is when they're at the airport, and your boy Ant-Man reveals a new power. And that was pretty cool. You know what would have made it less cool? If I'd seen him do it four times before. And so I think that, yes, I think they wanted to acclimate the proper raw audience with the demon character, but I thought it was a mistake because the demon, I even think it's a mistake to bring out of SummerSlam because it should be, like Ben said, something that is drawn out of this guy. Like, he should have to have his back against the ropes. Like, okay, you pushed me too far to ape my man Bill Bixby. You know, you won't like me when I'm angry. And then you bring the demon out.
And they're going to call your boy David Bixenspan, not Bill Bixby. Is there a chance he comes out as not the demon? I mean, have
that'd be ridiculous.
And then kind of promised it. what's Ballard doing under the ring? He's been under there a long time.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it really – does it really hurt, though, Nate? Like, I know it was probably a dumb decision and probably not the right one in any way, but does it really hurt anything? Like, is anyone – I mean, what does it hurt?
In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't hurt anything, but I do think, like, you can not lose money but still miss out on maximizing your investment. Yeah. And I think that's what they did here. Like, they didn't really lose anything.
So do you think more people would have ordered the network just – I mean, to me, this is where I'm torn on this one because I feel like – you know, anyone who's going to order the network for SummerSlam probably did.
Yeah.
And the promise of seeing the demon, to me, I don't know. I just don't see many people, like, buying the network last minute. Like, either you're a diehard WWE fan that's going to watch SummerSlam anyway on the promise of all these other matches, or you're already, a deep fan that's seen the demon on the network already in NXT.
Like, honestly, I would have loved that they had saved the demon for his Royal Rumble match.
Right, something like that would have been all right. But if you're going to do it at SummerSlam anyway, to me, it's not going to dull the crowd reaction. Like, the Brooklyn crowd is still going to go fucking bonkers for him. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we saw this Monday, we're not going to cheer. You know what I mean? Like, that's not going to happen. So I think they looked at it and were just like, everyone's, you know, our audience at this point has probably mostly seen him as the demon, and anyone who hasn't loves us enough that they're watching Raw and they're probably going to watch SummerSlam.
See, like, for me, it's more it doesn't bother me from a monetary perspective. Like what you guys said about, like, you cannot lose money, but you can still deny yourself making more. That's the story of WWE, I find. Like, but for the demon, for me, it bothers me on a character perspective.
Yeah, from the storytelling.
Like that should be something he does when he goes to fight, not to come out and do a dance for the crowd. And to me, it just kind of, it's not that it cheapens it, but I would have preferred for it to be drawn out, like Nate said, and then he has to go for it and get it. But like watching him come out and do that without fighting felt very odd. And I've seen a lot of shitty theater. Like, it just felt very strange and odd.
You produced a lot of shitty theater.
Oh, you have no idea. All right? I did a Cobra Christmas Carol, all right? The characters as Cratchit. Anyway, we don't have to get into that. But yeah, no, it just felt weird. It felt weird and odd and, I don't know, like, it would have been nice. It would have made it more special to pay-per-view, but I don't think they lost any money over it.
No. Well, then that being said, I think that the hook is the match itself, even though it's got I still am not going to get used to that Universal Championship moniker. But, like, does that mean whoever wins gets to go to the Impact Zone and defend the title at Universal Studios? But I think they put the belt on Balor. And I think
you have to.
I think it's going to be, you know, once you introduce the demon, I was like, okay, they got to pull the trigger on this. But that being said, I don't know if it's going to be this lengthy title run because I do think Seth Rollins is in their plans to hold that title. So I don't know if it's a 3-month reign or a 6-month reign, but I do think eventually Seth's going to have his hands on that belt.
I think you could very easily, like, I mean, this is something we've all been talking about forever, but I think you very easily turn Finn Balor and have Seth Rollins be the face chasing him. Mm-hmm. Because that's more my problem with Seth Rollins winning it is that you're just getting more of the same.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's I don't want to give them too much of the benefit of the doubt, but it seems like they're doing new stuff now. So it would shock me if they went back to Seth Rollins, 20-minute promos, right. Barely wrestling kind of thing.
All right, main event time, and I'm assuming this is the main event. We can talk about that in a minute, but the last match to discuss, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton. It's cool. They've been telling a good story with these guys. They've gone back to the old footage from 02 and talked about how they came up together. That's really neat. Of course, all the steroid stuff with Brock and the UFC, Orton back from injury. They did the awesome segment with Heath Slater this past Monday night as well, which was fantastic. I don't give a shit about your kids. And Brock, I mean, most interactive he's been in forever. But it's, you know, really torn on this one again, too. It's a big question. Like, you know, I think Orton can take the loss without a problem. I think Brock's losses are so few and far between. Do you really want to piss one away on Orton? Like, do you have him lose here, and then 6 months from now we're like, oh, if he had only beaten Orton, and he would have been stronger for X. You know, it's like, when's the last time he's really been pinned, Brock? Was it Triple H? Like, has he been pinned since then?
God damn it, it probably was.
No, it was Triple H.
Right? So, I mean, he's lost, right? He had the DQ thing against Cena, and then Rollins screwed him at 31, but he hasn't been pinned. So do you really blow that on Orton, or do you set it up for someone else, even if it's Reigns or whoever, eventually next year at some point? I cannot see, even with the drug stuff and everything else, I cannot see them eating a Brock loss that hasn't happened forever on Randy Orton, who's just there to finish things out, play out the string.
I think you said it, just it doesn't do anything for Orton to get the win. I don't think it matters. I mean, look, honestly,
by the way, I should just clarify, Undertaker obviously beat him last year, but it was screwy. Yeah. It wasn't
Brock could take the loss. I mean, he could take anything. You can run Brock over with a truck and then bring him back the next week. He'll be fine. But I just don't think Randy Orton gains anything. It's probably actually more interesting for Randy Orton to lose and then see how Randy Orton reacts. Mm-hmm. There's more to do with the Orton character that way. If Orton wins, I mean, where do you go from there? Do you make Orton's immediately got to be the top contender for every title because he beat Brock Lesnar. And I just don't think that's a direction anyone's interested in going in.
And they could do something where if Dolph loses and he loses, they could kind of the struggling veterans feud against each other, something like that, who can get on track.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting feud.
Yeah, it'd be great. They won't do it.
No.
It'd be great.
You gotta love having Aaron on this show.
Well, no, it's probably good. I mean, my mind runs wild on these things in the wrong direction.
But it's true, though. Yeah. Like, they've had so many times to do like a good veteran story,
right?
Mm-hmm. And they never do it. And it's like, just watch Rocky VI. It's great. Why don't they do? You know?
Yeah. Who do you think wins this, Aaron?
Oh, Brock.
Okay.
Nate? Yeah, for all the same reasons.
Yeah, Brock wins. I at least I hope we get the spot, though, where we get an RKO countering an F5.
Yes.
Because I do think, like, you got to give Randy a big moment in this match because he is so hot right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that to have him just have a regular match and lose a regular match to Brock, it doesn't really do anything. And he's the guy that's going to be sticking around as opposed to Brock, you know, when Lord knows when will be the next time we see this guy. So I think Brock, he should be the winner, but you also got to keep Orton strong because he's the guy that's going to be on SmackDown every week.
But how full-time is Randy at this point? I mean, just the way his body's breaking down, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to take long hiatuses moving forward. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be a week-in, week-out guy. I think him and Cena are both kind of transitioning into that older attraction phase.
Well, to me, Randy Orton, and you weren't on the show when we talked about it, Ben, Randy Orton should be the millennial version of 911 from ECW. And what I mean by that is, you know, he's the guy that comes out, has a big spot, you know it's coming, you're anticipating it, and he gives it to you. And, you know, he's not the guy that's going to be in the ring doing 20-minute matches every week, but he should be kind of the conscience of the show almost, where it's like, you know, somebody's here causing trouble, or somebody comes up from NXT, or somebody gets traded from Raw. Hey, you're going to take an RKO. Welcome to SmackDown.
I think the match itself is going to be great, too.
For sure.
I think it's getting overlooked a bit of how good it's going to be. Like, I think they'll have really good chemistry. I think Orton will take the necessary bumps that you need to take for Brock Lesnar to be successful. So,
And Brock needs a good match, man, because he's had a couple snoozers.
Brock is Mr. SummerSlam.
He's
going to do great.
All right. Couple of macro questions. We're going to wrap up. These are really quick, quick hitters. So round table, quick answers. What closes the show, Nate?
Brock and Orton.
Ben?
Brock and Orton.
Aaron?
Brock and Orton.
All right, Nate, what is the match of the night?
John Cena versus Mr. TNA, AJ Styles.
Benjamin?
I would say the same again.
Aaron?
I'm gonna say Brock Orton, just to be different.
All right. Title most likely to change, not counting the Universal, obviously.
That'd be the United States title.
Ben?
You got to stop putting Nate ahead of me because I'm just going to keep agreeing with him.
Aaron?
I think the tag team titles.
All right. Ben, title least likely to change.
I think that would be the WWE World Heavyweight title.
Nate?
I'm going to go with the women's title.
And Aaron?
Oh, right. Damn it. This is why I need Nate ahead of me. Look at the terrible decisions I make when I don't have them preceding me.
I'll go Intercontinental title.
All right. And last one, Nate. What match on paper looks great that's going to disappoint?
Oh, that's a loaded question. Let's go with Miz versus Apollo Crews.
Oh, no one expects that to be
great.
That
looks great on paper?
Come on. Man up.
Hey, you got Carl Weathers and the star of the Marine 3.
All right. Ben, what do you think?
I think that Cesaro Sheamus, which we all say like, oh, well, at least it's going to be a good match, is not going to be a good match. Mm. I think they've been up against each other too often, and this is where they fall.
Aaron?
I almost would agree with Ben, but they might just go out and stiff each other. So I'll just go with Reigns and Rusev.
All right. And final, actually last question, Nate. At the end of the day, come Monday, are we talking about this SummerSlam as closer to the top of the best SummerSlams, closer to the middle of the SummerSlam list, or closer to the bottom of the SummerSlam list?
Very much like... Damn, I just blanked on the movie. I had a great reference. I was going to say, oh, very much like Reservoir Dogs, this card is going to be remembered for being stuck in the middle.
Ben?
I think it's going to be closer to the top. I'm excited about all the matches we talked about, and I don't think we even got into, you know, potential surprises or upsets or appearances or things like that. I think this is going to be one of the good ones.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Joe, where's John Stewart play a role? Yeah.
Oh, if he screws over Cena again, that'd be the best.
Or I hope he doesn't help Rollins again.
I would say it's probably going to be near the middle, and it's only because I think what we've seen in the past with the long cards is that we get burnt out watching them. Mm. So I think it might take time for it to set in as to how good it or bad it was.
Well, a big test, you remember last year, that Owen Cesaro match, which was really good, but it was in that dead zone before the main event, and the crowd is burnt. So we'll see. I'll be there. If anyone else is going or plans on wanting to meet up, just let me know on Facebook or Twitter. Reach out, place2bnation or facebook.com/place2bnation. If you're going to be in Brooklyn, we have a get-together going on Sunday before SummerSlam, so hit me up and I'll get you the info there and you can come say hi.
As someone who's gotten to meet JT at a Supercard before, let me just say it is absolutely worth your time and money.
Yes, that warm, warm embrace we shared in the cockles of AT&T Stadium.
Cockles.
Let's take a break. Benjamin, thank you so much for your time here tonight. Glad you were able to swing it. When we come back, Chad Campbell's going to be here talking some G1 Climax, talking NJPW, New Japan, and talking some Scenic City as well. And then we will be wrapping things up from there. So we'll be right back. Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines. JT, the Godfather, and of course, A.A. Ron filling in for Steve Willie this week. And much like the vapors from that classic 80s song, boys, I think now it's time to start turning Japanese. A lot of news from the Far East in terms of pro wrestling. And in order to talk about this in a educated fashion, I think it's time to bring in a friend of the program, Place to Be Nation's assistant managing editor, Chad Campbell. What's going on, Chad?
Doing good, guys. How's it going?
Assistant to the managing editor, please. Please.
Always got to throw that in there.
Got to jam it in, just like we jam you in these podcasts, Chad. But you sound good tonight. It's about
time. I know. Clear. Hot. Crystal clear.
So essentially, he's our Daniel Bryan. Is that what you're saying?
More like the Dwight Schrute. That's what I picture.
Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. So concussions and all, he's here. But so it's been a big, big week. Of course, you know, a lot of focus around the world of WWE, which we've touched on. But a really big week going on over in Japan and New Japan Pro Wrestling specifically. We have the G1 Climax wrap up and some of the news. So Chad, I'm going to turn it over to you and just let you run with it, and we'll chip in where we can.
Yeah. So Sunday culminated the G1 Climax. Which this year was 19 shows. It ran from July 18th through, well, I guess, what, August 14th or so.
And now what year is this of the G1 Climax?
It's the 26th edition. Okay. Started in 91. So this was the 26th one. 19 shows. All were on New Japan World. I've watched all 19 shows.
You're a hero. You're a hero, Chad.
I've watched every single G1 Climax match. I hand waved the undercards on about night four, but I have watched all of the G1 Climax matches, which is pretty good undertaking. I'm done with New Japan for a while.
You basically went through the dojo in my eyes. I mean, you're ready to go.
Yeah. So I guess the big takeaway, and this will be pretty spoiler heavy if you haven't seen the shows, but I'd say the biggest takeaway was Kenny Omega. He won the whole tournament, which was the first time a Gaijin foreigner had won the G1 Climax. And that's an impressive feat. I mean, you talk about some of the guys that have been in the G1 Climax, from your Rick Rude to your Don Fry, Bob Sapps and all that. There's been some pretty good foreigners in the tournament, even AJ Styles the past couple of years, and no one has won it, but Kenny Omega did. And in winning, he had some absolutely standout performances. I would say the two biggest standout performances was on the next to the last night. That'd be night 18. Let me get the actual date of that show. It was August the 13th. August the 13th, he had a match with Tetsuya Naito, and that was who went on to the finals, them two. They were kind of locked in the B block. And they had, in my estimation, a 5-star match, which is the first 5-star rating I've given since Daniel Bryan versus John Cena at SummerSlam 2013. So I, as of right now, it's my match of the year. I thought it was absolutely outstanding. Omega's leg selling in that match was tremendous. Naito, if you haven't been following New Japan, Naito's undertaken a very great character change in about the past year.
He's the best.
He's kind of became this anti-hero who just doesn't give a shit about any of the tradition or any of the standards and practices. And that really worked well with Omega because these are the leader of Los Ingobernables de Japón, and Omega's the leader of the Bullet Club. So you had your quote-unquote kind of two heel factions, their leaders going at each other. And as a result, Omega kind of became the de facto babyface. It was just a tremendous match. And then he kind of followed that momentum right into the finals where he was facing Hirooki Goto, which Hirooki Goto was also an upset into the finals. He was in the A block with Tanahashi and Okada, some real heavy hitters. So Goto kind of snuck in and won that A block. And Goto's somebody I'm not a huge fan of, and I didn't really like him a lot of his matches throughout the tournament. And I thought in the final, Omega really kind of carried him to another great match. I thought Goto was kind of serviceable in the final. And while Omega's performance in that match wasn't as great as in the Naito match, which is, you know, one of the best wrestling performances you'll probably ever see, it was still really good and a really satisfying finish with him winning the tournament. And now it, I mean, who knows where this is going to take him, but it looks like going into the tournament, there was kind of some rumors that Omega may be kind of testing the waters, going back to WWE with his kind of Twitter feud with New Day and all that. But it looks like as of right now, they're firmly behind Omega, and he could kind of be the centerpiece of the promotion when we get to the January 4 Tokyo Dome show.
It's interesting that you bring up, you know, the rumors surrounding Omega, Chad, because one of the things that I was interested in terms of New Japan this year was how they were going to respond to some of the losses. You know, you talk about AJ Styles, you talk about Nakamura, some of the other losses. And in terms of the caliber, the quality of this event, did you notice a dip, you know, not having those quote-unquote big-time stars in this event?
So I think I have a little bit of a different take from a lot of the reviews I've seen for this tournament. The tournament overall, I would say there was a lot of good. And there were certainly people that I thought stepped up, like Kenny Omega, like Evil. He had a really good tournament. Yoshihashi kind of came out of nowhere and had a really strong tournament. So, and Michael Elgin continued to impress. So you had guys that did step up, but I also thought there was a lot of kind of glut and mundane matches mixed in with your Togi Makabes, your Hirooki Goto's, and just kind of uninspiring type stuff. Toru Yano was in the tournament, and if you don't know him, he basically does a complete comedy character shtick where he'll try to roll the people up and low blow them and pin them in 2 to 3 minutes. It's kind of humorous on the surface, but when you're watching it night after night after night, it gets really old really fast. So I do think in this tournament overall, you could see kind of a dip from the 2014 tournament, which was excellent, and maybe even slightly, in my opinion, from last year's tournament. But I think they have done a pretty good job in replenishing the void that Nakamura and AJ Styles and Gallows and Anderson's left, kind of putting in Omega in that role and putting in Elgin, who's the Intercontinental Championship, into that role and giving Shibata an increased presence as he's the NEVER champion right now. So I would say overall, they lost two of their probably four biggest entities when they lost Nakamura and Styles. I would say only Okada and Tanahashi were as big as those two. And so when you lost half of your big guns, so to speak, they've done a pretty good job of kind of steering the ship and stabilizing things this year and going forward.
Chad, if I could ask you about Kenny Omega. Like, I remember around maybe a year and a half ago, people online were, like, really soured to him. And now I feel the vibe is completely different. What has changed in his work to turn so many people around?
So he – and I got – I'm kind of on the same boat. Like, I'm a fan of his, but I'm not all the way, which is kind of weird. I mean, in Six Man's and in some of the other stuff, he still has no problem kind of relying on the comedy. And I think part of the critique and part of my problem with Omega in the past is it just felt like, you know, like a big wrestling nerd that was trying to be this great heel, you know, where he's like laughing maniacally and pointing to his head to show how smart he is. You know, just everything was turned the dial up to 10 and was just ridiculous. He still brings out this broom because he's the cleaner of New Japan. It's you know, kind of that hokey character. You know, this is somebody that's really big into like anime and stuff like that. So it just he doesn't seem like a badass or legit, you know, guy. So that was a problem in him getting over the hump. Even beyond that, within his matches, I thought his selling at times would falter, where he would just forego the storyline of an entire match just to kind of get his big spots in, and many times to the detriment of the match. I think in this tournament, he did a great job of reining that in, for the most part. He had a great match with Shibata, had a great match with Elgin, and then the two final matches I mentioned also had a great match with Yoshihashi. So really only a couple of his matches. He had a match with Nagata that I wasn't too high on. But besides that, of his, you know, 9 or 10, I think it was 10 matches overall in this tournament, he really kind of reined things in. Like I said, his selling in that semifinal match versus Naito was sublime. And it did feel like the moment kind of matched his emoting. Whereas, you know, if it's a random six man on a spot show and he's giving this big performance to the back row, it kind of feels hollow. In this case, it was like, well, you know, he is going for the G1 climax, which is a really big deal. So it kind of makes sense that you can really see him trying, you know, you believed in him to give his all to win. So I think he's made a couple of twerks, kind of refined, some refinement. You're killing me.
Sorry. Well, you said twerks. That's like it was like right out of the Criscolo bag of tricks right there.
So, I mean, his formatics have really been refined overall, and that's helped him. Tweaks was the word I was looking for there. Yeah, thank you.
So, Chadley, it seemed like this was a pretty big, I'm just going by what I saw on Twitter. It seemed like it was a surprise. Like, not people were, like you said, it was kind of the first, you know, obviously, Gaijin, non-Japanese guy to win the G1. So, was it. How would you compare it for non-fans of New Japan of like what kind of level of surprise it was? Like who winning, say, the Royal Rumble or something like that would you compare it to?
I would say it would be like if AJ Styles won the Royal Rumble. You know, not, I mean, it's not like Kenny Omega is somebody you would never expect, but I mean, it when the blocks were released, it felt like it was going to be either Okada and Tanahashi in Block A and then Naito in Block B. That seemed like the logical final. On the Voices of Wrestling Pick'em, I think like over 2/3 of the people actually picked Tanahashi versus Naito as the final. So that seemed like the way they were going. Okada and Tanahashi on the August 12th show, they had a 30-minute draw, and that allowed Goto to sneak in into the G1 finals. I would say Goto was probably a bigger upset to win his block than Naito, just because Goto, as a character, I can't remember exactly how many IWGP title shots he's had, but it's something like 7 or 8, and he's lost every single one of them.
Even when he paints himself all up.
Right, so he's kind of your perennial choker, that it feels like, you know, at one point, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. He won the 2008 G1 Climax. Around that time, it felt like they were kind of grooming him for the future. And now he's just been surpassed by Naito and Okada in the last couple of years. So him getting there was a pretty big upset. But, you know, I mean, Dolph Ziggler's wrestling for the championship at SummerSlam. I mean, that's almost kind of the essential. That would be a good comparison. I mean, you know, Ziggler is someone that's could main event, but somebody you wouldn't typically think about. And Goto's kind of the same way.
So if you were to project out the rest of the year until the big Tokyo Dome show in January, where do you see things going? I tell you to ask you who's going to win next year's G1, but it seems like who knows. So I'm going to ask you to just project out to January.
So New Japan's schedule is kind of weird in that after this, they really kind of, I would say, take a back seat for almost the rest of the year. They still have some decently big shows, but the biggest show is King of Pro Wrestling, which is in October. The other shows, Destruction in September and Power Struggle in November, are kind of your lower level big shows, and then the Tag League in December is an afterthought. So as of right now, it would be Omega versus Okada in the Tokyo Dome as the main event. And I see that as probably what they will go towards. The only difference I could possibly see would be if they switch it and Naito faces Okada again at King of Pro Wrestling and beats him, and then it would be Omega and Naito just to kind of build off their momentum of the match they just had. But I kind of see it as an Omega versus Okada for the IWGP. And then probably Tanahashi versus Naito as the semi-main event, which should be a really big match. And then they can kind of fill out the undercard from there.
Now, I need to ask this, Chad. I know it might be a little bit out of left field, but just in general, man, just as somebody who has cared about this person and hasn't seen him on my TV screen here in North America ever since the Revolution disbanded in TNA, I know the great Sonata, Seiya Sonata, was a part of this tournament. Yes. How did he come across?
So Sonata is, he kind of came on the scene, you know, this year as the newest member of the Los Ingobernables. And I think he did fairly well in this tournament. Now, he has a gimmick where in most of his matches, he goes to the outside and he uses a baseball bat, which to me can be kind of frustrating because it's right in front of the referee. You know, they say it's at the referee's discretion, but it's a little odd that he just blatantly cheats. But his match versus Tanahashi on the first night of the tournament was really strong. And he had a couple of other matches with like Tomohiro Ishii that was very good as well. So I don't think he hurt himself at all in this tournament. But that unit overall is really strong because you have him, you have Evil, and you have Naito all in the same faction. So those three are probably three of the seven or eight hottest acts in New Japan right now. So it's a really strong unit. It's the most popular. They've overtaken the Bullet Club in kind of popularity for the anti-hero fans that are in the crowd.
All right. Yep. Go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, I mean, what I love about the G1 is as arduous it can be to get through at times. Like, it feels like such a legitimizing thing, not just for the people who win, but also for kind of the sport of wrestling as a whole. And I was curious to your take as like, how do you think something like that would work here in North America? Do you think it's something they would ever? I mean, I can't imagine them ever doing it, but. Like, how would it work here? Do you think they'd do it as long? Do you think they'd actually let their big guys lose? What do you think would happen, Chad?
Yeah, I don't see it for like a WWE thing right now. I could see it for something like a Ring of Honor or an Evolve. I think that'd be very interesting. I don't think they have the roster. I mean, this was a 20-man tournament.
Round robin.
Yeah, so I mean, like, Okada, he's the IWGP champion. In this tournament, he went 5 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw. So he didn't do that great. I mean, and that's your champion. he barely, you know, got 500. Tama Tonga pinned Tanahashi in their match, which is a huge upset. I mean, that would be like John Cena, I don't know, I mean, losing to a
Jey Uso.
Real, yeah, like a low-level, real low-level contender, even below, like, Miz level. I can't even think of a comparison, but just a real complete upset. So that's why I don't see it for there, but something in Evolve, I think it'd be very interesting. And the G1 has really kind of evolved over time, you know, where before it was kind of a smaller tournament with the single elimination out of it, and now it's kind of engulfed to this huge event for North American fans where, you know, we have access to all of it. And it's a huge kind of gathering where you just binge on all this wrestling for a month. And they've actually said they're changing it. Kidani has announced they're changing the format next year. I don't know what that entails, but it should be interesting. Because, I mean, to me, the maximum, I think if they had 16 people or 14, it would be at its peak. Me personally, I think there's a little bit too much fat that was on each of the blocks where they could have cut a couple of people from each block. But I'm looking forward to seeing what they do because, I mean, as much of a slog as it is to kind of go through all this stuff the past month, it is rewarding, like, on Saturday morning when I watched that Omega versus Naito match at 7 o'clock in the morning. I was just, like, losing my mind, you know, as I was eating cereal in my underwear. I mean, just a great
kind of experience.
Hey, just think, if no North American company adopts this G1 tournament format, at least we'll still have the greatness that is Starrcade 89 and the Iron Man tournament.
Right, exactly. The 2-minute tag matches. So we can always hang our hat on that.
Right up there with the McGinn movie on Dangerous Lies and Big G1 climax. That's Chad in his underwear. Chad, before we wrap, I'm not sure. First of all, is there anything left New Japan you wanted to cover? And secondly, since we haven't had you on since, did you want to give any thoughts on your experience at the Scenic City Invitational?
Yeah, so the only thing coming up on New Japan is the Super J Cup, which is Sunday morning at 2 a.m. Eastern on New Japan World. And that, I think the first round, I enjoyed the first round. I think there was some disappointment in that the Super J Cup had a lot of outsiders. And it really looks like this is going to be kind of a New Japan-dominated tournament with the New Japan guys winning their first-round matches. But going into the semifinals and the finals, there's some interesting stuff. I mean, Will Ospreay's facing Matt Sydal in the quarterfinals, which I think will be great. Kushida is facing Kano from Noah in the quarterfinals, which I think should be
Robinson?
Very good. No. K-E-N-O-H. that should be also.
Can we get John Sterling match to call that match?
No.
Kano with a leg drop.
So that should set up some really interesting semifinals. Could be some repeat matches where you have something like Ospreay versus Taguchi in a rematch from the Best of the Super Juniors finals, and Kushida versus Jushin Thunder Liger, and they faced each other at Wrestling Dontaku in a great match. And I don't know who will win the Super J Cup overall. I'd predict probably either Ospreay or Kushida. That's a safe pick. Probably would pick Ospreay if I had to pick one right now. But should be an interesting tournament overall.
Speaking of Ospreay, quickly, let's talk about the match with him and Vader, because it seemed to cause a lot of hand-wringing across the internet, and kind of that age-old question, you know, they built this match up, they talk shit on Twitter, it all started when Vader ripped his match with Ricochet, and then it ended up, you know, spiraling into this whole fiasco where they ended up having this match in England. And what did you think, Chad, first of all, of the match actually happening? And what are your thoughts on Vader winning? Because that seemed to cause a lot, like a big kerfuffle across wrestling Twitter.
Yeah, I haven't watched that. I have that on my docket to watch it in the next day or so. I didn't put a lot of weight into it, honestly. I mean, it is what it is. They kind of, I mean, Pastor William Ever was the champion of Progress, and he was kind of a gimmick character that they put their belt on. So some of the same people that were critiquing, oh, how could Vader beat this guy, were praising Progress for giving, you know, essentially kind of their Santino-type character the championship. So it didn't make a lot of sense to me to kind of blame one thing and praise the other. I'll have to watch the match, but from what I understand, it actually helped build up a guy named Pete Dunne, who's really breaking out from that scene. So if that's the case, I don't have a problem with it because I think Pete Dunne's outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest offenses was, you know, Vader's a veteran and you defer to the veteran in that kind of match. And did you think Vader was going to fly out there to job to Will Ospreay? I mean, it just wasn't happening.
Right, I mean, now.
That's what caught me the most off guard, that people were actually surprised that was the outcome. Like, did they really think Vader was going to job for this guy? I mean, there was no planet that Vader was going to go take that match on and then lose.
And I wouldn't say Ospreay. I mean, it's not like Ospreay's been presented overall as this unbeatable person, even in his own promotions.
And it's not going to, like, losing to Vader in what was clearly like a stunt match isn't going to kill any momentum, any bankability, any respect, any buzz like that this guy has. I mean, it's just not. In this day and age, you know, it's not 1988 where that loss is like, you know, if it were on a big stage or something. But even then, it would have been buried in the territory. So I really don't think, whenever so many people are in the know these days, I don't see why there was so much hand-wringing over Vader winning the match. I mean, everyone. Ospreay's headed for big things, and everyone knows.
I mean, Kurt Angle beat Zack Sabre when he came out there a couple months ago, so, I mean, you should have seen it coming.
Right, right. Anyone who didn't was surprised, or should have been surprised. Aaron or Nate, anything on that match before we let Chad wax nostalgic on the Scenic City?
I just thought it was silly. I mean, it like Chad said, man, you know, you help out Dunn, which I think is the biggest bonus that people overlook, man. It's like, that's pro wrestling. That's, you know, you work people, you get everybody excited, and at the end of the day, what do you have? You set up this match with Ospreay and Dunn, and you're going to sell more tickets for that. Mm-hmm. So for anybody that was looking at this as some type of ideological match to settle everything, you know, old school versus new school, like this was the wrestling version of Billie Jean King versus, was it Bobby Rigg?
Right.
Like this one match was going to settle this debate. You know, I think they're reading too much into it. They got caught up in their feelings, and you know, it's pro wrestling, baby. That's what they do.
Anything from you, Aaron?
Well, it's Vader time, baby.
His penis pics aren't going to send themselves.
Look, it's way less egregious than, say, like Hulk Hogan beating Randy Orton, like when they're trying to build him up
and dancing for 20 minutes in between the big boot and the leg drop. All right, Chad, spin a little bit about the Scenic City before we let you go here.
So, I mean, the VOD was released on Monday. The DVD came out today. I think in the wake of the Scenic City, there's a lot of discussion about hyperbole and all that stuff. I can just tell you from my vantage point, I thought it was two very good shows. I thought there was probably five matches that I would rank either very good or great. You know, I don't know. I need to rewatch the finals to see if I would call the finals a low end match of the year candidate. But it was a really strong match live. I know it interweaved a lot of stories well. But overall, I mean, I thought it was two great shows. If you want to see kind of a mixture of some of your well-known indie stars with some of the Southern indie stars, worth a purchase, and you can pick it up from Rude Wrestling. So that's kind of my, I guess, pitch for it. That I think if you're go in with an open mind looking for two enjoyable shows, you'll certainly get your money's worth from it.
All right, there you go. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back to wrap things up.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network. where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, we're back from break. Running kind of long. The WWE thing went a while. Our news even went a while, too. And Chad finally got his time to talk New Japan. So we're going to push Brad off to a future episode. Make sure, though, to check out the pay-per-view this week. Death Before Dishonor, Ring of Honor's pay-per-view on Friday night. Kind of kicks off this huge weekend of wrestling that's coming up. I'm sure we'll be recapping that. We'll have Brad on in the future. I'm sure I'll have Kevin Kelly back as well, talking about that too. So before we do go, though, we're going to bring back something from one of our earlier episodes, and that is our closing thoughts. But we're going to be doing it in a bit of a different way, in that Aaron and I aren't doing it, and just Nate is, and there's a specific reason why. So Nate, why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Well, thank you, brother JT. And yes, there is a specific reason, which only became magnified as this week went on. Not only have we lost John Saunders, the great host from the Sports Reporters, which was just one of his many titles at ESPN, but we also lost John McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Group. And for those of you that might be scratching your head at one or both of those names and why we're bringing them up on a pro wrestling show, it's because these are two guys that literally changed the game. When you talk about John Saunders, somebody who brought class and grace to the raucous world of sports, you know, he took over an institution in the Sports Reporters that was originated by the late, great Dick Schaap, and he made it his own. And pretty much every sports show that followed, you know, your Around the Horns, your PTIs, any of those kind of crossfire type of sports shows, they drew inspiration from the Sports Reporters, and John Saunders was a huge part of that. And in terms of the political world, a lot of what we see on cable news is basically just people doing their riffs on what the McLaughlin Group was. And so, you know, in honor of John Saunders and John McLaughlin, I wanted to kind of go out with a closing thought. And I'm going to end in typical John McLaughlin fashion by giving you a prediction. So on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 meaning zero probability and 10 meaning a metaphysical certitude, here is my prediction, folks. And I'm going to put this at a 7. Matter of fact, no, I'm gonna go back on my own gimmick and put this at a 6 out of 10. On the heels of the formation of the Professional Fighters Association, there will be a pro wrestling union by the end of 2017. That is my prediction. Rest in peace to John Saunders and bye bye to John McLaughlin. Because if you really think about it, had that template not been set, where you got people kind of sitting around a table and going back and forth on these panel discussion shows, we might not have the format for a show like Clotheslines and Headlines. So when somebody who meant something to the culture passes, and this week we saw the loss of two of them, you know, you got to pay respects and hit those ring bells for them.
All right. Well said, Brother Nate. And with that, we're going to bring an end to episode number 5 of Clotheslines and Headlines. Aaron George, thank you so much for stepping in for Steve Willey, who can never be replaced or replicated, but somewhat duplicated, and you did a great job here tonight. We appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It was lots of fun.
Also want to
Brother George!
Brother,
I knew you, Tom!
Also want to give a big thanks to Chad and to Ben for joining us as well. Everyone, enjoy SummerSlam weekend, whether it's Ring of Honor, NXT, SummerSlam, Raw, SmackDown, NXT again, Cruiserweight Classic, whatever it is that tickles your fancy. I think there's some Evolve or something else in there too. Be sure to watch the world of wrestling. There's so much good wrestling out there these days.
TNA.
And so many different avenues and ways to access it. You should be enjoying as much as you can and listening to podcasts like this and others at PlaySummation.com. Be sure to subscribe to all our feeds on iTunes and leave us feedback left and right as much as you can. So for Nate, for Aaron, for Ben and Chad and Steven Spirit, I'm JT Ware. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Summer days drifting away to the sun.